This is a DH Audio production. This Matter of Marriage by Debbie Maycomer. Read for you by Paula Parker. Hallie's Journal, January 1st. A new year generally starts out with me writing a few inspiring lines about how I'm going to lose 10 pounds and pay off all my credit cards and other high expectations like that. It's the same every January. But this year's going to be different. Oh, I still want to lose those extra pounds more than ever, but for a different reason. I want a husband and eventually a family. And that means I need a plan. Being a goal-oriented person, I usually begin by identifying what I'm after, marriage. And then I work out a logical procedure for getting it, which in this case includes looking good. Not that I look bad now, but I'm talking really good. Are you listening, thighs? Because, as I've learned in advertising, packaging counts. This Christmas, I realize there's more to life than getting the Woman of the Year award from the Chamber of Commerce. It's time to let a man into my life. Until now, I've viewed relationships like dessert. Nice occasionally, but not with every meal. I poured my heart into making a success of my graphic arts studio, artistic license. But I want more. I suspect this has something to do with becoming an aunt. I didn't expect little Ellen to have such a profound effect on me. When Julie gave me the baby to rock, I swear my heart melted when I held her. In that moment, I felt something I can only describe as maternal instinct. I realized this is what's been missing from my life. I want a husband and children. Just how difficult can it be? Sweat rolled down Hallie McCarthy's forehead. Using the towel draped around her neck, she wiped her brow. Although she'd promised herself she wouldn't, Hallie glanced at the timer on the treadmill. 60 short seconds. She picked up her pace. Donna Lee had suggested she join a gym to meet men, and she would, Hallie told herself, when she was at her goal weight. But not now. She wasn't about to go prancing around a gym with thighs that resembled ham hocks. Needing a distraction to take her mind off the physical agony, Hallie turned to look out her living room window at the luxury condominium next door. Hey, she was getting a new neighbor. A moving van was parked in front, and a crew of able-bodied men, very able-bodied, she noted appreciatively, unloaded its contents. She wondered if one of those good-looking hunks might be her neighbor. The place next to hers was a 3-bedroom unit, the most spacious design available. Must be a family moving in. The treadmill timer went off. Hallie heaved a sigh of relief. Her short curly hair was matted against her temples. Her old gray sweats, she didn't feel comfortable sweating in her new color-coordinated ones, were loose around her waist. A promising sign. She'd lost 5 pounds in 21 days. The first two had fallen away easily, but the last three had been like chiseling at a concrete block with a tablespoon. She'd counted fat grams, carbohydrates, calories, and chocolate chips to little avail. Her best friend, Donna Lee Cooper, claimed Hallie was putting too much stock in the physical. Donna Lee was single, although she'd had a brief, disastrous marriage in her early 20s. To Hallie's delight, when she'd shared her goal of finding a man and marrying within the next 12 months, Donna Lee had decided to join forces with her. She said that, like Hallie, she wanted children. But Donna Lee brought a different strategy to their marriage campaign. Just be yourself, she'd advised. Being myself hasn't attracted a whole lot of attention so far, Hallie complained. Later, climbing into her car, Hallie saw her new neighbor. He was tall, solid, she decided, all shoulders with good upper body strength. Handsome, too, in an unobtrusive way. He did have an interesting face, and seemed the type of person she'd like to know. She turned her attention from him to the two kids at his side, a girl and boy, who were probably about 11 and 9. Great-looking kids. The girl waved. Her smile was wide and friendly. Hallie waved back, inserting the key into the ignition, and drove off. By the time she returned, an hour or so later, the moving van was gone and the two kids were riding their bicycles. The girl headed her way, long, coltish legs pumping the bicycle pedals.
Hi,
she called.
My dad just moved next door.
She stopped abruptly and hopped off the bike.
So I saw,
Hallie said, leaning across the front seat and removing her bags of groceries.
I'm Megan. That's my brother Kenny.
As if on cue, Kenny joined his sister. Megan tilted her bike onto the grass.
Here, I can help you carry those in. Mom says I'm a big help to her now that she and Dad are divorced.
Megan's expression grew more serious when she mentioned the divorce. Hallie's heart immediately went out to her.
Oh, that's okay. I need the exercise.
Hallie smiled. But I'd love you to visit me another time. As Hallie started to put the groceries away, she noticed that the message light on her answering machine was blinking. Her best friend had phoned. Hallie called her back immediately.
Okay, what's up? I found the answer,
Donnelly blurted.
What's the question? Where do we meet the men of our dreams?
You have my attention.
Where? The answer's a bit complicated, so stay with me. I found an ad in the Seattle newspaper for a dating service. First, you have to apply, and if you're accepted, you pay a hefty fee, and they'll arrange for you to meet a suitable match. One on the same financial level as you, whose personality fits yours. If you're accepted, the company is committed to finding you a match. Well, how hefty is the fee?
Hallie had recently forked over $1,500 on exercise equipment. Oh, so much for paying off her credit cards. Donnelly hesitated a moment.
$2,000. $2,000?
Yep.
I'd better get a date with Brad Pitt for that.
Donnelly laughed. Brad wouldn't date someone as old as either of us.
You sure know how to comfort a friend. Donnelly, you're not serious, are you?
For that kind of money, Hallie figured she could have liposuction and forget the treadmill and the dieting.
Yep, I'm 33. I don't have as much time as you. If this agency can help me find a decent man, then I'd consider the money well spent. Just think of it as a shortcut.
Hallie still wasn't sold.
What are you going to do? Wear a sandwich board that says available in big black letters? You've had your entire life to find a husband, and you haven't. What makes you think it's going to be different now?
$2,000?
Consider it cheap, believe me. Just call them, and they'll mail you a brochure. Phone me once you've read it. Promise?
Hallie agreed and wrote down the number. She replaced the phone receiver and shook her head. Who'd ever have thought this matter of marriage could be so complicated? Steve Maris's day wasn't going well. A parts shipment was lost somewhere in the Midwest. His secretary had quit without notice, and he suspected his ex-wife was dating again. The parts shipment would eventually be found, and he could hire another secretary. But the news about Mary Lynn was hardest to take. He poured himself a cup of coffee, sipped the hot liquid, and shuddered. Todd Stafford must have put on this pot. Todd was Steve's right-hand man at work and his best friend in the world. Todd was a great production manager. However, he made the world's worst coffee. Steve dumped it, rinsed his mug, and went back to sorting the papers amassed on his desk. Todd came into the office, reached for a coffee mug, and filled it. He pulled up a chair. You're either fuming about your ex-secretary or your ex-wife. I heard Mary Lynn's dating again.
Who did you hear that from?
Kenny.
You're grilling your kids for information about your ex-wife?
I know better than that. Kenny said that he wanted his mother to toss him a few softballs, but she couldn't because she was getting ready for a date with Kip.
Steve, it's been more than a year since the divorce. It's time to move on, buddy.
Mary Lynn has.
I know you had 12 years. I know it hit you out of the blue. But she wasn't happy, and everything you say and do only seems to make matters worse.
Todd, don't you have work to do?
All right. So I touched a raw nerve. No reason to bite my head off.
Todd hurried back to the shop, and Steve swallowed his irritation. On the drive home that afternoon, Steve exited the freeway and headed down the West Hill toward his new home. The kids had made friends with his next-door neighbor in short order, too, he mused. Steve hadn't met Hallie yet. Megan had told him her name. From what he'd seen of her, she was an exercise freak. His kitchen window overlooked her living room, and she had a treadmill set up there, alongside one of those stair-stepping machines. Every time he caught a glimpse of her, she was working out. She didn't seem to be enjoying herself, either. Steve turned into the Willow Woods complex and stopped in front of the two rows of mailboxes aligned at the entrance. Hallie stood in front of her mailbox, studying a large envelope as if she wasn't sure what to do with it.
Howdy, neighbor. He greeted her, inserting the key into his mailbox. Startled, she looked up.
Hello.
Steve Maris. He thrust out his hand. I moved in next door this past weekend. She blinked a couple of times.
You're Megan and Kenny's dad.
That's me.
Hallie McCarthy. She placed her hand in his. Nice to meet you. You've got two terrific kids.
Thanks. I think so, too. With a nervous motion, Hallie glanced down at the envelope she still held, then shoved it into her purse.
Well, Steve, I have to go. I'm sure we'll be seeing each other again.
Steve had caught the logo on the envelope. Dateline. He'd heard plenty about the pricey exclusive dating service.
Hallie raised her head just then. A friend suggested I write for information, she blurted. Her cheeks had turned a bright shade of pink. I'd never...
She paused, squared her shoulders, and gave him a smile that was decidedly forced.
I want you to know I don't need any help finding a man.
Head high, with a dignity Princess Diana would have envied, Hallie McCarthy walked to her car. Watching her leave, Steve slowly shook his head. Maybe he should steer the kids away from her. She seemed nice enough, but a little on the weird side.
Hallie's Journal, February 20th. Tonight's the night. I'm meeting Marvin. Marv. Yes, I'm at goal weight. It would have been easier if I'd blasted away those 10 pounds with dynamite. But they're gone, which is reason enough for celebrating. The fact that I actually have a dinner date with someone my friend Rita feels is perfect excites me. It was Rita who introduced me to Donna Lee long ago. She said she knew Donna Lee and I would become the best of friends. I have faith in networking. Although I haven't actually met Marvin, Marv, we've talked a couple of times and he sounds interesting. Dating isn't exactly a new experience, but now I'm looking at each man as a potential husband and father. There are certain traits I want in a man. I want to do this marriage thing once and only once, so I plan to do it right. This date with Marv is the beginning of a journey, though I can't say exactly where this journey will take me. Rita and I don't see much of each other anymore. I only hope Rita still knows me as well as she thinks. Hallie was going to annihilate Rita. The instant she opened the door and met Marv, she had her doubts. For starters, he didn't look like she'd expected, or Rita had implied. Not like Sean Connery at all, more like Elmer Fudd, and he wore a checkered bow tie. Marv seemed dissatisfied, too, so much so that Hallie wondered what Rita had told him about her.
You must be Hallie, Marv said, stepping inside her home.
He glanced around like an appraiser, as though tallying the worth of her furniture and personal effects. He scrutinized her the way he had her furnishings, without emotion, without warmth. Would you like a glass of wine before we leave? Hallie asked, willing to give the evening a try, if for nothing more than the fact that she'd spent almost $100 on her dress. He declined her offer of wine, explaining severely,
I'm driving.
Coffee, then.
Decaffeinated, please. He helped himself to a chair while she got their drinks. He pinched his lips in disapproval when she returned with a mug for him and a wine glass for her. If this was how the evening was going to continue, she'd need that wine. Hallie began the conversation.
I understand Rita's husband works with you.
You've known her how long?
He asked, removing a pad and pen from inside his suit jacket.
Rita? Actually, we've known each other since college. 9 or 10 years, I'd guess.
I see.
He entered the fact on the pad.
You're how old?
29.
Hallie took a restorative sip of her wine.
Never been married?
No. What about you?
She asked, gritting her teeth. She hadn't agreed to an inquisition, and this was definitely beginning to resemble one. He ignored her question.
You own a graphic arts business?
That's right. Hallie felt as if she was filling out a credit application. Look, is there a reason for all these questions?
I prefer to have significant background information on any woman I date.
I see.
She almost wished he'd asked how much she weighed. For once in her life, she would have been happy to tell someone. He flipped the book closed.
He helped her on with her coat and opened the car door for her. Good manners were gentlemanly. Things seemed to be improving. They were on the freeway when she first heard the engine rattle.
Sounds to me like there's something wrong with your car, Hallie pressed.
My car is in perfect running order.
Whatever the problem, it didn't delay them. They arrived ahead of their reservation time. Once the waiter had taken their order, Marv removed the pen and pad from his pocket again.
I have a few more questions for you. Unlike others, I prefer to choose my wife based on facts rather than feelings, which I think are completely unreliable. Since marriage is a long-term contract, I believe it's necessary to gather as much information as I can. I understand that you, too, are in a marriage mode, so this evening can be beneficial to us both.
He held her gaze for a moment.
I have to tell you, Hallie, you're getting good marks.
The tip of his ears turned red, and he cleared his throat before saying,
We've finished with the preliminaries. Let's get into your family background now.
I beg your pardon?
Medical history, things like that.
All right. All right. What do you want to know?
They'd discussed heart disease, alcoholism, and mental illness by the time their salads were served. Surely the entrees couldn't be far behind.
But before she tasted a single bite, he was making inquiries about STDs, fertility, and childhood illnesses. Hallie had finally reached her limit. This guy calculated everything down to the size of her pantyhose.
Any problems with...
She held up both hands.
Stop!
Stop?
I thought this was a dinner date so we could get to know each other. He made another notation, writing furiously. What did you just write?
Attitude. I'm beginning to have my doubts about you in that category.
Hallie pushed aside her half-eaten salad.
You have your doubts.
Listen, Buster, I'm not answering another question. This is ridiculous.
But you've rated the highest of anyone.
Thank you. I appreciate that. But I refuse to spend the entire evening talking about my grandmother's arthritis. Now was as good a time as any to break the news. I'm sorry, Marv, but I don't think this is going to work.
Marv looked surprised.
I wouldn't be so quick to say that. Although your attitude is a bit problematic, I find myself liking you. Once we know each other better, you'll value the effort I went through to gauge our compatibility.
I believe I've already gauged it. Unfortunately, we aren't the least bit compatible.
She tried to tell him in a way that left him with his pride intact.
I have my own test, so to speak, and I can tell that a relationship between us simply isn't going to work.
You're sure?
Yes.
Marv closed his pad, placing it inside his suit jacket.
Well, then, you've saved us both a considerable amount of time and effort.
Neither spoke, and before long Marv reached for his pad again. Now he seemed to be jotting down numbers, but Hallie didn't ask. Dinner arrived, and Hallie savored the silence as much as she did the blackened salmon. Marv seemed equally engrossed in his meal. After they declined dessert, the waiter brought the bill, and Marv grabbed it. He pulled out a pocket calculator.
Did you have, three or four of the crab stuffed mushrooms?
I beg your pardon?
The appetizer,
he said, his finger poised above the calculator keypad.
Three.
Hallie stared in shock as he tallied the dinner bill and stated,
Your half comes to $45.13, including tip.
My half?
Why should I pay for your dinner?
He asked.
You said yourself that we're incompatible.
Yes, but you asked me out.
True. Nevertheless, it was with the unspoken agreement that this date was between two people interested in pursuing a relationship. You aren't interested. Therefore, your half of the dinner bill comes to $45.13.
Hallie picked up her purse. It wouldn't do any good to argue. Luckily, she had two twenties, and yes, a five, which she kept hidden for emergencies. The 13 cents practically wiped her out. With nothing more to say, they left soon afterward. Hallie heard the car well before the valet drove it into view. She steeled herself for a long, uncomfortable ride home. She wasn't far from wrong. When they reached the interstate, the engine noise had intensified until Marv couldn't miss it. He cursed and pulled off to the side of the freeway. Smoke rose from underneath the hood, billowing into the night. This didn't look good. The way things were going, he'd probably make her pay for half the tow truck, too. Marv leapt out of the car and slammed his door. Hallie got out, too, shutting hers just as hard. He glared at her over the top of the hood. I don't find your attitude the least bit amusing. The biggest joke of the night was my agreeing to go out with you. The cold wind whipped past her, and she tucked her hands into the pockets of her coat. Unfortunately, she'd worn a flimsy coat, more of a wrap, because its jade green went so well with her new dress. The only thing she had to keep her warm was her anger, and so far it was working. If that's how you feel, he said stiffly, you can find your own way home.
Fine, I will.
She carelessly tossed out the words and started walking, high heels and all. Soon she was chilled to the bone and blinded by all the headlights flashing by. One of her heels chose that moment to break off. At least it wasn't raining. The doorbell ringing woke Steve out of a sound sleep. He grabbed his jeans and pulled them on as he hobbled into the living room. The last person he expected was his next-door neighbor. I'm sorry to wake you. Hallie's eyes were desperate in the pale porch light. A scruffy-looking fellow hovered behind her, and a taxi stood parked in her driveway. Could I borrow $20, just until tomorrow afternoon? Sure. He reached in his hip pocket for his wallet, extracting a bill. Thank you. She sent an embarrassed glance in Steve's direction. After the driver left, she pushed a trembling hand through her tangled hair.
I'll get the $20 to you after work tomorrow afternoon. I quit carrying my credit cards and didn't have my ATM card with me, she explained, rushing the words. It took all my cash to pay for my half of the dinner.
Don't worry about it.
I promise to have the money back tomorrow. You have my word on that.
He grinned. I said not to worry about it. Do you want to come in for coffee and tell me what happened? She paused, and he knew she was tempted to accept.
If you don't mind, I'll take a rain check on the coffee. I'm fine, really. It was just a date gone bad.
From Dateline? No, I didn't sign up with them. This was a date arranged by a friend. A former friend. She filled in a few of the details. The questions. The restaurant bill. The car. He listened sympathetically, nodding now and then, marveling at her ability to laugh at her situation. Don't let it get you down, he advised. I won't. Although she looked disheveled and pitiful, she managed a weak smile. It'd take more than one miserable date to do that. Good woman. He waited until she was all the way inside her house before he closed his own door. Only then did he allow himself to laugh. He had to hand it to McCarthy. The lady had grit. On her way home the next evening, Hallie stopped off at the bank for cash. Wanting to put the task of repaying her neighbor behind her, Hallie headed directly for his condo after she parked her car. Megan answered the door.
Hi, Hallie.
Hi, Megan. Is your dad here?
Yeah, he's in the shower.
She pulled the $20 bill out of her purse. Would you give this to him?
Sure.
Give me what? Steve strolled barefoot into the hallway, wearing jeans and an unbuttoned plaid shirt. A damp towel was draped around his neck, and his dark hair glistened with water. Oh, hi.
Hi.
She smiled weakly, embarrassed about their last meeting.
Hey, Dad!
Kenny shouted, leaping off the sofa.
Hallie brought you $20. Let's go out for pizza, okay?
I don't see why not. Steve grinned. Hallie, you're welcome to come along. I wish you would. The kids will desert me for the video games the minute we arrive, and I'll be stuck there sitting with no one to talk to. She wavered. Even if she didn't have any plans, she didn't want to intrude.
Please come,
Megan urged. Sure. Pizza, loaded down with cheese, spicy sausage and olives. After nearly 2 months of exercise, after week upon week of eating lettuce and vegetables and skinless chicken, she'd gladly walk an extra mile on her treadmill for pizza. The pizza parlor was filled with Friday night family business, the noise roughly equal to that of a rock concert. While Steve stood in line to order their dinner, Hallie steered the kids toward one of the few empty tables. Steve returned 5 minutes later with two soft drinks, a couple of beers, and a pile of quarters. Kenny's eyes lit up like the video games he loved. 12 quarters each, Steve said, gazing sternly at his offspring. And they have to last you all night. Once they're gone, they're gone. Got it? Got it. The quarters disappeared along with Megan and Kenny. Steve sat down across the picnic-style table from Hallie. It was kind of you to invite me. He was really quite good-looking. The fact that he'd been willing to help her out only added to the attraction. Predictably, Megan and Kenny arrived within seconds of the pizza. The biggest pizza she had ever seen. For a while, there was silence as they all helped themselves to huge slices. Megan smiled at Hallie.
I'm glad you came with us, she said.
I'm glad you asked. It was deja vu all over again, as a baseball great used to say. Hallie sat across the linen-covered table from a man she normally would have crossed the street to avoid. Sleazy was the word that came to mind. He looked up from the menu and flashed her a smile that said she was lucky to be with him. Hallie had trouble believing that her own assistant, someone who knew her and presumably liked her, could possibly believe she'd be compatible with this clown. Hallie reviewed the menu selections, keeping an eye on price. Chad had made his selection and set aside the menu. How about a little something to loosen our inhibitions? He suggested. The thought of loosening anything with this character terrified her. Such as a double martini.
I'd like mineral water.
He jiggled his eyebrows a couple of times.
Liquor is quicker.
You aren't nervous, are you, Cupcake?
She gritted her teeth.
The name's Hallie.
Chad said you're...
Chad said?
Then understanding dawned.
If you aren't Chad Ellis, who the hell are you?
Damn. I should have known I couldn't pull this off. Chad had to leave town unexpectedly, and he asked me to fill in for him. My name's Tom Cheddars. Don't worry. Chad will vouch for me. We've been good buddies for a lot of years. We work for the same company.
Why didn't you tell me right away who you were?
I was afraid you wouldn't have dinner with me if I did.
He flashed her a toothy grin. I would have preferred it if you would have been honest with me from the beginning. He did at least look mildly guilty.
You're right. I should have... All I'm asking is that you give me a chance.
Hallie sighed deeply. Let's be honest with each other from now on, okay?
Scout's honor.
You were a scout?
He shook his head. Nah, they were a bunch of sissies as far as I was concerned.
I see. The evening could prove to be a very long one indeed.
I'm gonna take care of you, sweetie pie. You and me are gonna have fun.
The name is Hallie, she reminded him, feeling the beginnings of a headache. Not Cupcake or Sweetie Pie or anything else. He gulped down his double martini and raised his glass in the direction of the bar to signal for another.
Whatever you say, darling.
Hallie made an effort to maintain her composure. How long have you been selling medical equipment?
I don't. I work for the same company as Chad, only on the pharmaceutical side. I sell condoms.
A lump of ice went down her throat hole.
Condoms?
She choked.
Yep. We've got them in all kinds of flavors. Our flavor for February is cotton candy.
Hallie slid a guarded look in both directions, praying no one could hear their conversation. Do you mind if we discuss something else?
Sure, he responded amiably. I do a brisk business in laxatives as well. Won the top salesman award 2 years running. Laxatives, running. Get it?
Hallie's head was starting to pound in earnest now, and she knew she couldn't go through with this. Even if she didn't eat, she couldn't stand another minute in this man's company. Tom, listen. I'm really sorry, but this isn't going to work.
But Chad said...
What did Chad say?
That you are hot for a real man, and baby, I'm the one for you. I can teach you things you ain't never gonna see in a textbook. I haven't been in the condom business all these years without learning a few tricks of the trade, if you catch my drift.
His drift came straight off a garbage heap, in Hallie's view.
I don't know what to say, Tom. You've been misinformed. I'm not interested in any of your lessons.
You mean you were willing to let me wine and dine you, but you weren't going to give me anything? I thought this was a bread-and-bed date.
What I'll give you is money for my meal. She pulled out her wallet and threw a $50 bill on the table. Good night, Tom. I wish you well.
No more blind dates, she swore to herself. It wasn't only discouraging, it was getting too expensive.
Hallie walked out of the restaurant. With a sinking sensation, she checked to be sure she had enough cash to cover the taxi fare. No, that 50 was all she'd had. She was going to need another loan from Steve. She'd better phone him. Steve answered on the first ring.
Hi,
she said, deciding to ease into the subject of another loan rather than blurting out the sorry details and throwing herself on his mercy.
Hi, he responded.
Hallie suspected he didn't recognize her voice.
It's Hallie from next door.
Yeah, I know. Wouldn't it be easier to stick your head out the kitchen window and yell?
I'm not at home. I went out on another blind date.
Not with that same jerk.
No, I found an entirely new jerk.
I just walked out on him, and I don't have enough cash for the cab fare home. Could I take out another loan?
It humiliated her to ask, but she had no option.
This'll be the last time it ever happens, I promise you.
Where are you?
Some restaurant. I don't know where.
Dumb. Next time she'd pay attention. Next time she'd bring her own car.
I'll come and get you.
No, that was the last thing she wanted.
I appreciate the offer, but I refuse to let you go to that trouble.
You're sure?
Positive.
Steve's front door opened the minute the taxi pulled up to the front of her place. He loped across the lawn and paid the driver, who promptly left.
You all right? Steve asked.
No,
she admitted.
But I will be soon enough. Thanks for the loan, again.
Hey, what are neighbors for?
He smiled. Hallie unlocked her front door and walked into her darkened home. She tossed her purse on the sofa, switched on the lights, and headed straight for the phone in her kitchen. Donnelly answered immediately. Without preamble, Hallie said,
You're right.
I love hearing it, Donnelly said, but I'd like to know what I'm right about.
Dateline. I'm calling them first thing in the morning.
Her announcement was followed by a short pause.
What happened? Suffice it to say, I'd pay Dateline double their normal fee if they could find me a halfway decent man.
Oh, Hallie, you poor thing. Dateline found Sanford for me, and I've never been happier in my life. I'm sure there's someone out there for you.
I'm sure there is, too, and at this point, I'm willing to pay for the privilege of meeting him.
Hallie's journal, March 20th. Dateline took long enough finding me a match, but Mark Friedlander was worth the wait. We met last night for the first time. I drove to the restaurant myself. I was nervous, but Mark put me at ease. I like him. He's intelligent, well-mannered, and just plain nice. Mark's an engineer, divorced, no kids. The fact that he was willing to invest $2,000 to find the right woman tells me he's as serious about this matter of marriage as I am. We're seeing each other again soon. I can hardly wait.
Hallie rolled her grocery cart over to the display of fresh tomatoes and carefully made her selection. She wanted everything to be perfect for this dinner. She'd been dating Mark for 2 weeks now, and he'd teased her into agreeing to cook for him.
Hey, Dad, there's Hallie.
Hearing her name, Hallie turned to find Steve shopping with his kids.
Howdy, neighbor,
Steve called out.
Hi, guys.
Hallie was pleased to see them.
How's it going?
Great, Steve said. I haven't seen you around lately.
I've been putting in a lot of extra time on a project at work, and she beamed as she said it. I'm seeing someone.
Congratulations. I knew you'd eventually land on your feet.
Hey, Dad, ask Hallie,
Megan urged, pulling on her father's sleeve.
She'd be perfect.
Yeah, Dad, you can ask Hallie,
Kenny said excitedly. Steve ignored the pleas and would have moved on if Hallie hadn't stopped him.
Ask me what?
He shook his head.
It's nothing.
Steve?
All right. Do you bowl?
Bowl?
As in ball and pins?
Yeah,
I guess, although it's been a few years.
What's your average?
Well, I could generally knock down 3 or 4 pins. Why?
Dad needs a woman who can bowl,
Kenny explained. Steve darted his son another quelling look.
I prefer to do this myself, all right?
He turned back to Hallie. I'm part of a couples bowling league, and since my marriage breakup, my sister's bowled with me. Unfortunately, her husband was transferred, and she had to drop out of the league just before the tournament.
Oh,
Hallie muttered, her heart sinking. She was sure she'd be more of a liability to Steve than a benefit. Heaven knew she owed the guy, but she wasn't sure he'd appreciate the kind of help she could give him.
It's just that I don't think I'd do you any good. Like I said, I haven't bowled in years.
Surely there's someone better qualified than me.
We could teach you,
Megan persisted. Hallie felt herself weakening. Twice this man had come to her rescue, and not once in the weeks that followed had he reminded her what a fool she'd made of herself. That in itself demanded her consideration. I'd be willing to give it a try. It's the least I can do after all the help you've given me.
So you will.
Steve was clearly pleased. But I'll need a little coaching first. The first time Steve watched Hallie throw the ball, he was reminded of an old Fred Flintstone cartoon. It looked, honest to God, as if she'd raced down the alley on tiptoe, and the bowling ball had headed straight for the gutter. She looked guilty when she turned back.
Don't worry. Just relax.
He tried to reassure her. The bowling ball was returned. Hallie approached the line a second time. She made some inexplicable movements with her feet, shoveling to the left, to the right, and then back to where she'd started. Up she went on her toes, glaring menacingly at the pins, then raced forward like a ballerina terrorist. Her bowling ball slammed into the gutter again.
My turn,
Megan said, rushing forward. Megan walked up the alley like a pro, released the ball just the way he'd shown her, and effortlessly knocked down 8 pins. Steve placed 2 fingers in his mouth and whistled loudly in appreciation. Kenny was next. He carried the bowling ball up to the foul line, studied the pins, then bent forward and gently let the ball go. It moved as if in slow motion, and when it reached the pins, they fell almost gracefully. Now it was his turn. Steve threw a strike, his ball exploding against the pins. He was good and had the trophies to prove it. Hallie retrieved her ball, walked up to the starting point, then turned back and looked at Megan. His daughter motioned for Hallie to move to the left. Hallie did as Megan advised, but when she released the ball, it headed straight for the right-hand gutter. Steve closed his eyes. Maybe it wasn't too late to back out of the tournament. He opened his eyes in time to see Hallie's next bowling ball balancing precariously on the outer edge of the lane, then unexpectedly taking a sharp turn toward the head pin. To everyone's surprise, Hallie managed to strike down 6 pins.
It just took me a while to remember what I was supposed to do, she informed him.
They bowled 3 games, and Hallie improved with each one. It wasn't until they'd all piled into the car for the ride home that Steve realized how much he'd enjoyed himself. He was comfortable with her. He supposed that was because they weren't romantically involved. They could be themselves without worrying about impressing each other or meeting inflated expectations. They drove through the brick entrance to Willow Woods and onto the well-lit streets. Hallie inhaled sharply.
That looks like Mark's car.
He must have been able to get away sooner than he expected. Hallie climbed out of the car and waved.
Mark! She called. You're back early!
As Steve retrieved his bowling ball from the trunk, he heard Mark say, Is this the friend you were helping out? Steve detected nasty sarcasm in the man's voice. The kids caught it, too, and they exchanged startled glances. Steve introduced himself, then stuck his hand out. Mark ignored it.
Mark!
Hallie had never seen him like this. He grabbed her arm and steered her toward the condo.
We'll discuss this inside,
he snarled. Steve stood next to his car, his face hard. Was he waiting for Hallie to ask him to intercede? One look at his clenched fists told her he was more than ready to do so. Megan and Kenny hovered beside him. Too numb to even think, Hallie unlocked the front door. Mark followed her inside.
I notice you didn't mention that the friend you were helping was male.
Does it matter?
Damn right it matters.
He punctuated his words by repeatedly stabbing his index finger at her.
I'm not going to have any woman of mine. I'm your woman?
This was news to Hallie.
I paid $2,000 to meet you, bitch,
he shouted.
You damn well better consider yourself my woman. You don't go out with any other man when you're with me. Understood?
She met his look, her own anger spilling over.
No man calls me a bitch. You and I are through. Now get out. Just a minute here. What part of get out don't you understand?
The doorbell chimed, and they both ignored it.
Hallie?
Steve shouted from the other side.
Answer the door. Are you all right?
While she might have appeared outwardly calm, her heart raced, thundering wildly in her ears.
Mark was just about to go. Isn't that right?
All right, Mark growled, pushing past Hallie. If that's the way you want it, fine.
Don't come back either,
she said. Mark walked toward his parked car, paused and turned around.
You aren't any prize yourself, Hallie, he yelled back. Take a look in the mirror if you don't believe me. No wonder you have to pay a dating service to find a man. Belt him, Dad!
Kenny shrieked, punching the air a couple of times with his fist. Mark hurriedly climbed into his car, slamming the door loudly. He revved the engine and took off with the tires squealing. Hallie sank down on the step and closed her eyes, barely able to believe what had happened. Are you okay? Steve asked with a gentleness that nearly brought tears to her eyes.
Fine, she said. Hunky dory.
But she was shaken to the core. Kenny flew to her side.
Was that your boyfriend?
Not anymore. She managed a frail smile.
Good thing, 'cause that guy's a real jerk.
Mark had succeeded in fooling her. From the beginning, there'd been signs of his possessiveness. She hated to admit it, but his many phone calls weren't because he'd missed her. He was simply checking up on her. Hallie recognized now it wasn't only her desire for a husband that had blinded her to Mark's character flaws. It was also the money she'd invested in Dateline. Hallie, come inside. You need to sit down. Steve carefully took Hallie by the arm, then led her back into the house. Racing ahead, Megan grabbed the pillow off the sofa and fluffed it up. Kenny got her a glass of water.
Who was the jerk anyway?
Megan asked.
Yeah, he's lucky my dad didn't kick his butt.
Kenny, you two wait for me at home. I won't be long. Rarely had Hallie been more embarrassed. Her face burned.
I can't tell you how sorry I am, Steve, she said when they were alone.
Hallie, there's no need to blame yourself for this.
Look at me, Steve. Really look.
She could trust him to tell her the truth. She didn't doubt that for a second.
Answer me this, and don't spare my feelings. Is there something wrong with me?
Wrong?
Am I repugnant? Ugly?
Good grief, no. Do I look naive? No.
But this, he said with less conviction. Then what is it about me that attracts major jerks?
Allie, be fair. The first two were blind dates.
It doesn't matter, she muttered miserably. I'm finished with men.
She had a sudden craving for double fudge macadamia nut ice cream. It had been Christmas since she'd last eaten anything cold and sweet, and if she searched her freezer, she'd be willing to venture she'd find a carton there. Don't you think that's a bit drastic? Eating double fudge macadamia nut ice cream?
No,
he said confused. Cutting yourself out of the dating scene. At this point, no. She hurried into her kitchen and opened the freezer door. She shoved aside her Weight Watcher frozen entrees and thrust her arm in, feeling around for an ice cream container. There was none. She rested her forehead against a stack of vegetarian lasagna. Oh, the unfairness of life, without even the consolation of ice cream. When she looked up, Steve was standing next to her. Maybe I should call a friend for you. I think it's a woman you need just now. Steve was right. On her way over,
Donna Lee could stop off at Baskin-Robbins. Hallie wanted insider information from Steve Maris, and she'd come to get it. After work Monday night, she'd given him plenty of time to shower and have his dinner before she'd walk across their connecting yards and rung his doorbell. "Come on in," he said, gesturing toward his living room. "I need your help," she said, figuring he'd appreciate it if she came right to the point of her visit. "Another loan?" He sat on the chair across from her. "No." She didn't find the question humorous, even if he did. "As you know, I'm hoping to find a husband, have a couple of kids, live happily ever after." "You haven't exactly made a secret of that." "Well, after my recent failures, I've been forced to give serious consideration to my approach, and I realize I've made a fundamental mistake. All along, I've looked at a potential husband for what he could bring to a partnership. Is he intelligent, kind, financially solvent, a man of integrity? These sort of things. But in retrospect, I see that, as well as looking at what a man can give me, I should examine what I have to offer a relationship." "Oh." Steve settled against the back of the chair. "Like what?" "Basically the same things. Intelligence, integrity, etc. What I need to know is how to present myself in the best light."
"You think being who you are isn't enough?"
He frowned. "I need an edge. Something that'll attract the attention of the kind of man I want to meet. 53 million men in the world, and only 12 of them are serious about a permanent relationship." Steve laughed. "Tell me what a man really wants in a woman he intends to marry. The first thing he's going to look for." This story is continued on the other side of the cassette.
"What a man wants in a woman he intends to marry," he repeated slowly.
"Think about it. There's no need to rush."
The question was complicated, and she wanted him to give it his full consideration before responding.
"I don't have to think about it. I already know. Let's start with the physical." She should have known that would get top priority.
Steve studied her as if to gauge how honest he could be.
"I don't know a man who isn't attracted to a woman with big breasts."
He glanced at her quickly.
"And long legs."
He paused, waiting for her reaction. Hallie refused to give him one, although she had to bite the inside of her mouth to keep quiet.
"It doesn't hurt if she can cook, either. The fact is, I'd marry a woman who could make a roast chicken dinner as good as my grandmother's."
Unable to contain herself any longer, Hallie leapt to her feet.
"You mean to say that for a man, everything comes down to the physical? And if she can cook? That's disgusting. I'm serious here."
"Hey!"
He raised both hands in a conciliatory gesture.
"So am I. Most men check out the equipment first. You wanted the truth, and I'm giving it to you. Don't blame me."
"What about integrity and commitment? What about loyalty and honesty? Don't any of those qualities matter?"
"Well, sure, but that was understood. I thought you wanted something to give you an edge. Well, I'm telling you what it is."
"You mean men really are that superficial?"
"Well, yeah."
Hallie rolled her eyes. As far as she could see, she was a lost cause. She was short, had small breasts, and other than steak and salad, she couldn't cook worth a damn. Hallie's Journal, April 16th. "It's been a couple of weeks since my big blow-up with Mark Freelander. I couldn't believe it when he phoned the other day as if nothing had happened. The man's got nerve, and little else. I told him not to call me again. Megan has a key to Steve's place, and the kids are perfectly capable of staying on their own for an hour or so, but they've been coming over to my house instead. I enjoy their company. They're great. Dateline called, too, with the name of another man. I've got too much invested in this project to quit now. Whenever I'm tempted to give up, I sit down and read through my goal planner. This is possible. I can do this. I will do this."
"Hey, Dad, do you know what tomorrow is?"
Megan asked Steve as he led the way from the soccer field to the parking lot. He'd played on an adult league for a couple of years, and both kids participated in the children's fall league. Other than the fact that tomorrow was the 28th of April, Steve had no idea.
"Hallie's birthday,"
Megan announced.
"She's turning 30.
"Really?" Steve hadn't seen much of his neighbor lately. He got a kick out of her reaction to his husband-hunting advice. He'd heard from the kids that she'd signed up for cooking classes.
He knew he'd offended her by mentioning a woman's bus line, but what he'd said was the truth. He wasn't talking about himself, of course. He didn't spend a lot of time looking at a woman's chest. Oh, well, he did look now and then.
What man didn't? She isn't dating anyone.
Kenny climbed into the car behind his sister.
She's regrouping,
Megan explained.
Yeah, she's baking cookies and stuff.
Kenny bounced the soccer ball on his knee.
When I asked her why, do you know what she said? She said men needed help knowing that they wanted to get married. Is that true, Dad?
I guess so.
Do you like Hallie?
The question came from his daughter. You mean romantically? Hallie's a wonderful person, Steve answered carefully. I like her a lot, but she isn't the woman for me. The only woman he'd ever loved was their mother.
Why?
Kenny asked. Don't get me wrong. Hallie's great, but...
She isn't Mom.
Megan finished for him. Yeah, she isn't your mother.
But Mom's dating Kip,
Kenny threw in. The sound of the man's name made Steve clench his teeth. So she's still seeing the old Kipperoo, Steve joked, trying to disguise his concern.
A lot,
Kenny sighed deeply.
I think you should ask Hallie out,
Megan said, studying him intently.
She's a lot of fun, Dad,
Kenny insisted.
She bakes all these cookies and then gives them away. I asked her why she doesn't eat some, and she said it's because she's come to hate her treadmill.
Steve grinned. I'll think about it, he promised. Steve didn't give his conversation with Megan and Kenny another thought until the following evening. The lawn badly needed to be mowed. Being a generous, kind-hearted soul, or so he told himself, he mowed Hallie's half of the shared yard when he'd finished his own. It was when he turned off the lawnmower that he heard the music coming from Hallie's place. A blues number. The wail of a solitary saxophone that seemed to speak of sadness and trouble. He paused and wondered what that was all about. Then he remembered what Megan had told him. This was the day Hallie turned 30. Steve had spent his last two birthdays alone. There hadn't been anyone around to make a fuss over him. Was anyone making a fuss over Hallie? His heart went out to her. Steve showered and changed his clothes. Before he could change his mind, he stuck a candle in a snack cake, grabbed two bottles of beer, and knocked on her front door. A moment later, she opened the door. Happy birthday to you, he sang, and handed her the cupcake.
Who told you?
She asked, wide-eyed with surprise and delight. The kids. Hey, it isn't every day you celebrate your 30th birthday. Come on in, she said, leading the way into her living room. Although I don't know that I'm fit company. 30, she muttered, collapsing onto the sofa. And not a marriage proposal in sight. Steve uncapped one of the beers and passed it to her. Tell Uncle Stevie all about it. Uncle Stevie? Hey, I'm 5 years your senior. I've spit in the eye of middle age, spreading middle, weak knees, failing eyesight, and everything. A smile twitched at the corners of her mouth. That isn't all. I have other reasons for being depressed. I gained back 5 of the 10 pounds I lost. One little slip with a double fudge macadamia nut ice cream, and they're back. As far as he could see, those pounds hadn't hurt her any. She looked just fine. Have you had dinner yet? She seemed to find the question amusing and smiled broadly. Not breakfast or lunch either. Too much work. Then this is your lucky day, because I was about to order Chinese. It's on me. He walked over to her phone, removed the business card from his wallet, and ordered enough to feed them both for 2 or 3 meals. Soon the scent of sizzling pepper beef and almond-fried chicken wafted enticingly through the compact kitchen. This is one of the sweetest things anyone's ever done for me, Hallie said, arranging 2 plates on the table and putting water on to boil for tea. Because they were both hungry, they ate in silence. It no longer surprised him how comfortable he felt with Hallie. As he'd explained to his children, he wasn't romantically interested in her, but he considered her a friend. He'd come to believe that in many ways, friendship was of greater value. I feel so much better. Hallie pushed her plate aside. Both physically and emotionally. Thank you, Steve. I'm glad you're my neighbor. Hallie walked him to the front door. I am too. He opened the door, then turned and gently held her shoulders. Happy birthday, Hallie. He lowered his mouth to hers. As kisses went, it was good. Unexpectedly good.
Her lips were soft and pliable, molding easily to his. She smelled and tasted great. Her mouth parted slightly, and he found himself deepening the kiss. The old adrenaline started to flow about then, and he drew back abruptly, not wanting things to get out of hand. She buried her face in his shoulder. He ran his fingers through her hair and kissed the top of her head. "There's someone special just waiting to meet you, Allie. He's out there, wondering why it's taking so long." "That's funny," she murmured. "I recently told Donnelly the same thing. It sounded much more convincing when I was saying it, though." Steve chuckled. "You'll be just fine." She broke away with obvious reluctance. "Thanks again, Steve, for everything." He wondered if she was including the kiss.
"Did you have a nice birthday?"
Kenny asked, leaning against Hallie's kitchen counter. "Very nice." She lifted cookies hot from the oven off the baking sheet. "Your dad bought me dinner."
"Do you like my dad?"
Kenny asked, tossing the hot cookie from hand to hand.
"Sure."
Hallie absently scooped dough onto the sheet for a new batch of cookies.
"I think your dad's great. He works hard and loves you kids. I've been impressed with what a good father he is."
She paused, wondering how much she should say. Megan and Kenny continued to study her as if waiting for more.
"I like his sense of humor."
Kenny smiled encouragingly. Recalling how Steve had twice lent her money to pay taxi drivers, she added, "He's generous and caring. He hadn't pressured her into the bowling tournament either. He's a friend. A good one, but..."
"That's great," Kenny interrupted her. "But do you like him enough to marry him?" "Don't rush her,"
Megan barked, glaring at her younger brother. Kenny ignored his sister.
"You'd make a cool stepmom."
"You would," Megan agreed, nodding.
Hallie felt a bit unnerved.
"I'm glad you think so, but I'm just not the right woman for him. Your dad's a great guy, but he isn't for me. I hope you don't mind too much."
Kenny helped himself to a cooled cookie.
"Not too much. Besides, when we asked Dad, he said almost the same thing."
Goosebumps rose on the back of Hallie's neck. "You asked your father about marrying me? And what did he say?"
"That you have a neat personality and everything,"
Kenny explained.
"But you aren't his type either."
The man's attitude rankled. Why, Steve Maris would be the luckiest man in the world to marry a woman like her. Of all the nerve!
"Hallie, are you mad about something?"
Megan asked.
"Mad? What do I have to be mad about? She'd wring Steve's neck. That's what she'd do. How dare he tell his kids he liked her personality? That was the kind of thing men said about women they found sexually unattractive."
"Dad's home!"
Kenny yelled, leaping off the sofa. He grabbed his backpack and headed toward the front door. Megan stayed behind a moment. "You wanted to ask me something?" Hallie asked.
"Next week is Take Your Daughter to Work Day. Dad said I could go to the office with him, but I don't want to be a machinist. I'm kind of interested in art, though, and I'd like to see what you do, Hallie. Can I spend the day with you?"
Hallie recalled herself at Megan's age, how she would have given anything to see a commercial artist at work.
"That would be wonderful. Are you sure your dad won't mind?"
Megan beamed her a wide, carefree smile.
"He'll be glad. Thanks, Hallie."
Megan gave her a quick, shy hug and raced outside. Megan stood behind Hallie at the drafting table in the large workroom at Artistic License.
"What are you doing?"
"I'm working on a logo design to advertise a French baker," Hallie told her. She'd been playing with a number of ideas for the better part of an hour. This was often the most difficult aspect of her job. "Pull up a chair, kiddo. The logo will be painted on the front window, take out boxes, napkins, letterhead, and so on. The clients serve coffee and pastries, but their specialty is pedophores."
"What are those?"
"Small frosted cakes, a little larger than chocolates." Hallie deftly sketched a picture of the Eiffel Tower. "Do you want to try?" Hallie asked. She was fresh out of ideas herself. Megan picked up the pad and sucked on the end of her pencil the same way Hallie did. Hallie smiled, sliding her arm around Megan's shoulders. The girl smiled back.
"Being a graphic artist is fun, isn't it?"
Megan asked.
"Sometimes."
"Also frustrating, challenging, and a few other choice adjectives," Hallie mused, as she scribbled away at a new concept. Megan glanced over her shoulder, drew a deep breath, and gestured around her.
"Your company is so big,"
Dad's going to be surprised when he picks me up this afternoon. He thought you sat around and drew pictures all day.
Really? That amused Allie. Steve hadn't a clue how complicated her business was. She did everything from letterheads, designs, and printing to commercial photography. But then, Hallie suspected if she was to visit his workplace, she'd have her eyes open, too.
You know what I thought when you said pedophores?
Megan asked.
I thought of really short numbers.
She laughed softly to herself. Short fours? Hallie asked. Megan nodded. Hallie nimbly drew a series of short fours, each with a face and personality. Their only apparel was a French beret, rakishly tilted. Megan looked at the drawing and giggled. Hallie laughed, too. It wasn't bad. She set the fours dressed in their berets on top of a linen-covered table. Clever and eye-catching. She was on to something, thanks to Megan. She was insane, Hallie told herself, because only an insane woman would have agreed to look after a 6-month-old infant for 2 days while her sister and brother-in-law spent the weekend camping on the Oregon coast. Just how much trouble could a 6-month-old baby be? She asked herself with bravado. When Julie arrived with enough paraphernalia to fill a moving van, including a portable crib, a mammoth diaper bag, a miniature plastic bathtub, and more, Hallie knew she was in way, way over her head. Ellen's a good baby, Julie assured her. You've got nothing to worry about. Hallie's fears exploded to life even before the fumes from Jason's car had disappeared. Ellen woke up. The kid, even at 6 months, was no fool. She knew immediately that the woman holding her wasn't her mother. She let out a scream a horror movie starlet might envy. Hallie cuddled the baby. It's Auntie Hallie, she said a little desperately. Remember me? Hallie continued to hold and rock Ellen until the screams gradually eased to pitiful sobs. When Megan appeared at the kitchen door, Hallie could have kissed her.
This is your niece?
Megan asked.
Is her diaper wet?
Her diaper? Hallie hadn't given it a thought. Poor, poor baby, she cooed, reaching for the diaper bag Julie had left behind. Sure enough, there was the storehouse of disposable diapers, along with wipes, powder, diaper rash ointment, and a furry blue bear. No instruction manual, though. Ready to prove she was capable of such an undertaking, Hallie spread a flannel blanket on the carpet and placed a squirming Ellen in the center. She smiled proudly over at Megan.
This isn't so bad.
She promptly revised her opinion when it became apparent Ellen wasn't going to make this easy. By the time she'd finished, Hallie was exhausted.
You did great,
Megan congratulated her. A glance at her watch showed that Julie and Jason had been gone less than an hour. Only 35 more to go. At supper time, she said goodbye to Megan, feeling confident now that she could manage. She changed her mind shortly after midnight. Ellen woke her out of a sound sleep, screaming so loudly that Hallie hurled herself out of bed and stubbed her toe while madly searching for the light switch. Ellen wanted nothing to do with her. Babe in arms, Hallie walked until one of her slippers formed a blister on her toe. It did no good. Ellen was in no mood to be comforted. Ellen's forehead was warm to the touch, but Hallie couldn't be sure if it was due to hours of nonstop screaming or a raging fever. Maybe Ellen was seriously ill and needed a doctor. Just as the thought of calling 911 entered her mind, she happened to notice a light on in Steve's kitchen. Hallie raced to the phone. What's wrong? Steve asked groggily. Steve was a father. He'd been through all this and survived. He'd know what to do. Listen, big boy, I'll give you $1,000 if you can get her back to sleep. You're kidding.
Do I sound like this is a joke?
She was forced to yell as Ellen increased the volume of her cries. Give me 5 minutes. It took him 3. Come on, he said, standing in the doorway, dressed in wrinkled gray sweats. We're going somewhere? So he felt Ellen needed to go to the emergency room, too. While she wrapped Ellen in an extra blanket, Steve carried the car seat out to his truck, positioning it in the middle of the seat. He skillfully took the baby out of her arms and placed Ellen in the car seat, then helped Hallie climb inside. What hospital are we going to? She asked, locking her seatbelt. Luckily, Julie had given her a signed permission slip before she left in the event of something like this.
We aren't!
He had to speak loudly to be heard over Ellen's fevered cries. They hadn't gone more than 2 blocks before silence reigned. Hallie never heard anything more blissful in her life.
My guess is she's teething, Steve said. How you holding up, Aunt Hallie?
Good.
She lied. The rumble of the engine and the twisting road lulled Ellen into deep slumber. But it wasn't only Ellen who fell asleep. Hallie must have dozed off, because the next thing she knew, they were parked outside her condo. She jerked her head up and discovered Steve lifting Ellen, car seat and all, out of the truck.
"Sorry to wake you, Sleeping Beauty," he whispered.
Her house was dark and still when she unlatched the deadbolt. Gently, Steve removed Ellen from the car seat and placed her in her little crib. They both waited, fearing the worst. After a few minutes, it became apparent that Ellen wasn't going to stir, and they tiptoed out of the room.
"Thank you,"
she whispered.
"Think nothing of it,"
Steve returned.
"Just don't forget, you owe me $1,000.
Having said that, he kissed her on the forehead and let himself out.
It had been one of the longest weekends of her life, but it was over. Julie had been so thankful to Hallie. "Hey, what are aunts for?" Hallie smiled proudly. Minutes after Julie's car left, Megan appeared at the kitchen door. She glanced guardedly over her shoulders as if she expected her brother or her father to show up at any second. "What's wrong?" Hallie asked, anxious to know what was troubling the girl.
"Can I come in?" "Oh, Hallie, I'm real worried about my dad."
Hallie frowned. Surely Steve wasn't sick or injured. "What's wrong with him?"
"Mom's decided to marry Kip. She's going to tell him tonight when she comes to get Kenny and me."
"Oh, boy." Hallie held out her arms, and Megan walked into them, hiding her face in Hallie's sweater.
"Will you talk to my dad?"
she asked after a moment. Hallie's gut instinct was to stay out of it, and she would have, if it wasn't for two things. Steve had been there for her. He'd seen her through the heartache of celebrating her 30th birthday alone, and he'd saved her sanity by helping her with Ellen. In many ways, he was as good a friend as Donnelly. "I'll do what I can," Hallie promised. Megan lifted her tear-streaked face to Hallie's.
"My dad's going to need a friend, and he won't call Todd."
"Todd?"
"His best friend. You haven't met Todd?"
"Not yet." Come to think of it, Steve had never formally met Donna Lee, either. Hallie heard a car pull up out front.
"I gotta go. It sounds like Mom's here."
Megan wiped her face with her sleeve and slid off the bed.
"Bye."
Knowing that Steve was probably in no mood for company, Hallie waited an hour. She searched the back of her cupboard until she found the bottle of rich Tennessee bourbon a grateful client had given her last Christmas. Standing in the rain at his front door, she repeatedly rang the bell, but to no avail. Wasn't he going to answer?
"Steve!"
she shouted, pounding on the door.
"Would you open up before I drown?"
He threw open the door a moment later and didn't look any too pleased to see her.
"What are you doing here?"
She held up the bottle.
"I thought you might need medication."
He frowned in puzzlement.
"You know?"
"Megan told me." He stepped aside and let her in. Hallie found a couple of clean glasses. She filled them both with ice and poured him a double with no mixer. Her own she watered down considerably. He glanced up and offered her a feeble smile when she handed him the drink. Sitting down in the chair across from him, she tentatively tasted the drink and blinked rapidly as it seared a path down her throat.
"You all right?" Steve asked.
She nodded. Their eyes met, and Hallie could barely look at the misery in his.
"I'm so sorry, Steve. I know you wanted to get back together with Mary Lynn."
His shoulders heaved in a deep sigh. All he cared about was that this other man was stepping in, taking his place within the family.
"We met in high school," Steve said after a while.
"You and Mary Lynn?" she asked.
"Mary Lynn was so damn pretty, my heart would stop every time I saw her. She used to come by every day to watch the football team practice. I imagine you were the star player. Quarterback. How'd you know?"
"A lucky guess," she grinned. Steve leaned back against the sofa cushion. "I loved her from the moment I saw her," Steve said.
"I asked her to marry me on our first date."
Steve let his head fall back against the sofa and closed his eyes.
"I knew the first time I kissed her that I was going to love her. Later, my dad told me the same thing happened to him when he met my mother. He asked her to dance at a USO party. One spin around the floor was all it took."
Hallie sighed. A broken marriage might be an everyday tragedy, but it was a tragedy nonetheless.
"I gave her a ring the very next week. Naturally, we didn't tell anyone it was an engagement ring. Our parents would have hit the roof."
Hallie would never have guessed that Steve possessed such a romantic soul. No man had ever loved her like that, or wanted her so much.
"I married her in my heart the night of our first date. Our hearts were connected, and I knew I wanted to spend the rest of my life loving Mary Lynn. The lump in Hallie's throat thickened painfully, and she tried unsuccessfully to stifle a sob. Steve focused on her. Hallie? She bit her lower lip and searched in her pocket for a tissue.
It's nothing.
You're crying.
I'm not.
She was. Steve disappeared and returned with a box of tissues. He studied her as if he didn't know what to say.
Thanks,
she said, reaching for a tissue. She blew her nose and tucked the tissue in her pocket.
I'm sorry. I'm supposed to be the one comforting you.
He placed his arm around her shoulders, and she pressed her head against his. Steve patted her on the back. You're a good friend, Hallie McCarthy, he said.
You too, Steve Maris.
His arm came around her, and they hugged for a long time. He pulled away and asked, Want me to walk you home?
No. I can make it across the lawn just fine.
She swiped at the moisture on her cheeks.
Are you going to be all right now?
Sure. Steve thought about Hallie as he watched her return home. In some strange way, her crying had been a release for him. When she'd first arrived, he'd been in no mood for company, yet Hallie had managed to bring a smile to his face. When he counted his blessings, Hallie McCarthy was among them. He sure hoped she found a man worthy of her. Hallie's journal, June 22nd. I talked to the people at Dateline, and they're reviewing their files. The woman I spoke to said they'd have another name for me by the end of the week. I bought myself some Martha Washington geraniums. Lovely deep red ones. I'm going to plant them this afternoon. Steve was washing his company truck when Hallie went outside to plant the geraniums. She'd never known a man who took having a clean truck so seriously. He was wielding the long green garden hose, which snaked across the lawn, but he paused when he saw her. Nice day, he said. He looked darn good, Hallie noted, with his shirt unbuttoned all the way down, revealing a strong, muscular chest. She adjusted her large straw hat. Kneeling on the soft, moist grass, she cleared a space between the tulips and daffodils that had bloomed earlier in the spring. When she'd finished transplanting the geraniums, she strung her hose across the yard. I've never understood what a woman sees in flowers. If it was up to me, I'd stick a couple of plastic tulips in the ground and let it go at that. Hallie rolled her eyes. Well, it's men and their he-men trucks that get me. Women and their romance novels. Hallie wasn't going to stand still for that. Men and their remote controls. Later, Hallie couldn't remember if she'd intentionally doused Steve. She'd laughed while holding the hose, which had jerked and splashed water on the legs of his jeans. Steve's eyes slowly met hers. She opened her mouth to apologize, but then realized she wasn't sorry. Not at all. Do you have anything to say for yourself? He asked, advancing toward her, a menacing look on his face. Hallie retreated, one small step for each giant step he took. The water dribbling out of her hose was no match for the power sprayer he'd been using on the truck. I stand by my convictions. Do you now? He sprayed the legs of her jeans the same way she'd sprayed his, only the water pressure in his hose was much stronger, and she was soaked to her knees. She pointed out the difference in their weapons. He turned away as if the guilt factor had worked, giving her ample time to cross to the outdoor faucet and increase the water pressure. If she'd stopped to think about what she was initiating, Hallie might have resisted, but the temptation was too strong. Without giving him any warning, she liberally sprayed his backside. Steve's reaction was quick as lightning. Soon an all-out water war had erupted, complete with threats and shouts of retribution. In seconds, they were both drenched to the skin. Hallie's hat had long since disappeared, and her blouse was plastered to her front. You're a wicked, wicked man, she declared after being forced to plead for mercy. And you're not to be trusted, he returned. She laughed, enjoying their exchange. I just lost control, she said, which was true enough. His attitude had certainly inflamed her, not to mention his open shirt. Well, no man had the right to look that sexy. You better get inside and change clothes, he said. You too. He might not be as wet as she was, but Hallie had done womanhood proud. Water dripped from Steve, just not as much of it. Do you have any plans for later? He called unexpectedly, just as she was about to enter the house. I thought I'd ride my bike along the river. Want to join me? Hallie smiled back. I don't have a bike. You could use Megan's. I'm sure she wouldn't mind. You've got yourself a deal. I'll change clothes and be right out. She changed and met Steve in front of his garage. Climb on, and I'll see how much I should adjust it. Don't worry. I'll hold on to the bike. Hallie perched on the seat and placed her feet on the pedals. Since Megan was considerably shorter than she was, her knees thrust up toward her face. Conscious of making a comical sight, she glanced at Steve to discover that his attention had left her and was riveted on a car down the street.
It's Mary Lynn.
His ex-wife pulled to a stop and parked. Completely forgetting about Hallie, Steve released the handlebars and started walking toward Mary Lynn. Before Hallie could free her feet from the pedals, the bicycle toppled sideways onto the grass. Steve didn't notice. Hallie brushed the grass from her pants and noticed a trickle of blood on her elbow where her arm had struck the concrete. It wasn't much, just a little scraped skin. But it fired her anger. She stared at Steve, who was gazing at Mary Lynn.
Can we talk for a moment?
Mary Lynn asked Steve in a voice that couldn't have been sweeter.
Of course.
Hallie, we'll go cycling another time, all right? He didn't wait for a response. How dare he treat her like this? Dismiss her with no regard for her feelings? Good thing she had no romantic illusions about him. Angry, Hallie returned to the house and doctored the cut. The small scrape didn't really require a bandage, but she applied the largest one she could find. She actually had been looking forward to cycling with Steve, but there'd be frost in the tropics before she'd consent to do anything with that man again. 20 minutes later, the doorbell chimed. It was Steve.
I can't believe it.
Wait till you hear what Mary Lynn wanted. Hallie crossed her arms and blocked the doorway. She came to ask me in person if I'd be willing to take the kids for 2 weeks while she's on her honeymoon with Lardbutt. He seemed to be waiting for her to respond. Hallie didn't.
Doesn't that beat all?
He shook his head as if this was the most unreasonable thing he'd ever heard.
Are you going to?
Well, yeah, but that's beside the point.
Uh-huh. That's what I thought.
He squinted at her. Is something wrong?
What you did to me just now was despicable.
Mary Lynn drives up, and not only do you completely forget I exist, you let me fall off that stupid bike right in front of her. I was mortified.
Steve's eyes widened with surprise.
Oh, come on, Hallie. You embarrassed me. You discounted me. All so you could jump through hoops to satisfy your ex-wife. Friends don't do that to friends. I don't need friends like you.
Fine.
I don't need any grief from you, either. I get all I can handle from one woman. I don't need another one messing with my life.
Steve turned and stalked toward his house.
It'd help if you accepted the fact that your marriage is over,
she shouted after him, too angry to censor her words.
In case you haven't noticed, Mary Lynn's engaged to someone else.
Steve whirled around.
You can offer me all the marital advice you want once you've found yourself a husband.
His words felt like a slap in the face. She retreated into her house.
Damn, but he missed Hallie. He'd really blown it with her.
He'd seen neither hide nor hair of her since, which was quite a feat considering how often they ran into each other most of the time. He hoped he and Hallie could be friends again. He missed the laughter she brought to his life. On impulse, Steve left a one-word note on her windshield the next morning. Sorry. Nothing happened. He was convinced she hadn't noticed. And then, the following morning, he found a piece of paper tucked under his windshield wiper. He unfolded it. You're forgiven. Smiling, Steve stuck it in his pants pocket. On his way home from work, Steve bought a red rose, a box of chocolates, and a bottle of chilled white wine. He showered, changed his clothes, and waited until he was certain Hallie was home. Grabbing the wine and chocolates and placing the long-stemmed red rose between his teeth, he rang her doorbell. Hallie answered, took one look at him and laughed. Her smile was like sunshine, and Steve basked in its warmth. Friends? He asked.
Friends?
She led him inside. Even though they'd only been on the outs a week, it felt like a month.
What I said about getting yourself a husband before offering me marital advice, I regretted it as soon as the words left my mouth. I'm sorry, Hallie.
It seemed to him that her bottom lip quivered ever so slightly, but he might have been wrong.
What you said was true. I spoke out of turn.
Not really. Letting you fall off the bike when Mary Lynn arrived wasn't one of my finer moments. You had every right to be upset.
Let's put it behind us.
Fair enough. He handed her the wine, the chocolates, and the rose.
Thank you,
she said, and stepped forward to kiss his lips. It was a feathery kiss, a light kiss, a kiss without passion, which made the heat soaring through his blood difficult to explain. He resisted the urge to reach for her shoulders and pull her back into his arms. Resisted the urge to kiss her again. He longed to feel the pressure of her mouth on his, and the soft and feminine imprint of her body.
Hallie suggested they drink the wine on her patio. The evening was lovely, with a cloudless blue sky and the gentlest of breezes. Hallie sat back on her folding chair, gazing up at the sky, her legs stretched out in front of her. Steve relaxed, too. "You dating Bill Gates these days?" he asked, thinking about the man with the fancy car he'd seen in her driveway. "Bill Gates is married." Clearly, she wasn't going to be forthcoming with the information he wanted. "Who drives the Z3, then?" "Oh, you mean Arnold Vance, Dateline's latest offering." She glanced at him. "You two met?" "No. I went out for a jog a couple of nights ago and saw him parked outside of your house." He hated to reveal how curious he'd been. "He looked like the perfect candidate for a husband. Are you seeing him again?" She nodded, but without a lot of enthusiasm.
"Next Wednesday. You know what irritates me? This guy is everything a woman could ask for, and all I can manage is token interest. He leaves me yawning."
Steve put a concerned expression on his face, but inside he was grinning widely. So, the car didn't make the man.
"Donna Lee's experiencing the same thing," Hallie was saying. "She's dating this real estate broker, a catch with a capital C, and for the life of her, she can't dredge up any excitement."
"Why?" Steve asked. "If I knew that, I wouldn't be sitting here drinking wine with you." He smiled, remembering a similar smart-ass remark the night she'd looked after her baby niece.
This felt good, sitting out on a warm summer evening with his friend.
"So," he said, "did you miss me?"
"I did. It surprised me, too. I not only missed you, I felt miserable and guilty."
"I hope you're satisfied."
"So did I," he said, figuring that if she was willing to be open and honest, he wouldn't be anything less. They sat in companionable silence for a few minutes, then chatted about this and that, the kids, the neighborhood, movies they'd seen. Sipping his wine, Steve found himself studying Hallie with fresh eyes. Lovers? He and Hallie? She was attractive. Tonight she wore shorts and a blouse with a V-neckline. He caught himself thinking about her breasts and how he'd like to see them and...
For heaven's sakes, this was Hallie!
Steve frowned as he reminded himself. She continued chatting, and Steve listened with half an ear while she told him about the short business trip she'd planned to attend a trade fair in San Francisco. He noticed small things about her that he hadn't paid attention to in the past. Her mouth was incredible. Her lips were perhaps the most perfectly shaped he'd ever seen. He studied them as she spoke, noticing the way she moistened them with the tip of her tongue. It was a purely innocent movement, not intended to be seductive at all. Furthermore, he'd seen her do it 1,000 times, and it had never affected him like this. He sighed and gazed up at the heavens. Hallie, friend and neighbor.
Hallie arrived home from work feeling tired and irritable. Her mood lightened when she saw Steve with the kids on the patio. Apparently, he'd decided to barbecue hamburgers. Kenny wore a chef's apron that hung to the tops of his tennis shoes. The sliding glass door of the kitchen was open, and Megan was carting their dinner out to the small picnic table set up on the grass.
"Care to join us?"
Steve called out when he saw her.
"Kenny's cooking!"
The 9-year-old grinned from ear to ear and held up a spatula with an extra long handle.
"Megan made the salad,"
Steve boasted. Megan shrugged one shoulder as if to say it wasn't any big deal, but Hallie could see she was pleased by her father's praise.
"I'll just get changed and come right over,"
Hallie promised. Megan followed her into the house.
"Mom and Kip are on their honeymoon. She hasn't phoned, not even once."
Hallie heard the hurt in the girl's voice. "That doesn't mean she isn't thinking of you, sweetheart. You're with your father, and there's really nothing for her to worry about, is there?" Megan shook her head.
"I guess not."
Hallie placed an arm around the girl's shoulders, and they went out to join Steve and Kenny. One burger had fallen into the fire, and a frazzled Kenny was trying to lift it out with the spatula, dumping the remaining burgers directly into the fire. In his attempt to help, Steve burned 2 fingers. While Megan got ice for Steve, Hallie rescued the burgers. They laughed at the incident as they ate. In fact, the entire meal was spent laughing, teasing, and talking. Later, with the kids flopped down in front of the television, Hallie and Steve sat in her patio chairs and gazed up at the stars. Hallie suddenly had an idea so obvious she couldn't believe she hadn't thought of it before.
"Donna Lee! You and Donna Lee! She's perfect for you!"
"Me?"
"It's time you started dating again," she said.
"Since when did you become my social secretary?"
"Since tonight. Now don't argue with me, because it won't do any good. I'm going to arrange a date for you and my best friend."
Steve was silent for a moment.
There's always Todd. He's perfect for you.
Really?
Friday night, he said. The four of us agreed.
He held out his hand. Hallie placed her palm in his.
Agreed.
Hallie's doorbell chimed precisely at 8.
Donna Lee would say one thing for Steve. The man was prompt.
Hallie tossed her a look of encouragement, mingled with hope, as she answered the door. Donna Lee recognized Steve Maris from glimpses she'd caught of him during visits to Hallie's place. He entered the condo with a tall, attractive man at his side. She could tell by the other man's stance that he wasn't any keener about this double-blind date than she was. It was when she saw his face that her heart stopped. Todd Stafford.
Todd, from high school.
Her first crush. Somehow Donna Lee managed to smile politely when Hallie introduced her to Steve, but she had trouble taking her eyes off Todd. He didn't seem to recognize her, and she wasn't sure she should say anything.
Hallie, this is Todd Stafford.
He shook hands with Hallie, but his gaze returned to her.
Donna Lee Norman?
His question was more breath than voice.
It's Cooper now. I was married when I was young. Unfortunately, it didn't last.
Me too.
Todd dragged his eyes from Donna Lee and turned his attention to Hallie.
You two know each other?
Hallie asked, looking from one to the other.
We attended the same high school.
Todd answered for them.
Hallie's gaze questioned Donna Lee. Donna Lee nodded. Talk about a fluke. Talk about fate. Talk about coincidence.
It was just as it had been all those years ago. He was with someone else.
Hallie, her very best friend. All she could do was smile and pretend it didn't matter.
The years had been good to him, Donna Lee noted. He looked exactly as she remembered, only better. There was an unmistakable maturity about him that had been lacking at 18. The lines on his face revealed depth and character, and his lanky, boyish body had matured into hard-muscled masculinity.
I thought we'd take my car,
Steve said, interrupting her reverie.
Sure.
Donna Lee made an effort to stop staring at Todd and remember that Steve was her date. Soon they were outside and in the car. Donna Lee sat in front with Steve, and Hallie and Todd were in the back. No one seemed inclined to speak. It could have been her imagination, but Donna Lee was sure she felt Todd's gaze on her, the way her thoughts were on him. Steve did try to engage her in conversation, but Donna Lee doubted that her one-word replies made sense. In business, she'd outgrown her shyness, but now her tongue felt as if it were glued to her teeth. And all because a boy she had once idolized was in the back seat with her best friend. One thing was certain, she thought with a silent laugh. She needn't worry about Steve wanting to date her after tonight. He'd be glad to get rid of her. She remembered the Todd of years past. The closest she'd ever come to actually speaking to him had been in the cafeteria a few weeks before he graduated. They stood next to one another in the food line, and afterward, hating herself for being too shy to murmur so much as a greeting, Donna Lee had left a note on his car. It read, I think you're wonderful. She hadn't been brave enough to sign her name, something she'd always regretted.
End of side two.
There was no more time for memories. They'd arrived at the waterfront Mexican restaurant. The place was filled with wonderful exotic scents, and festive mariachi music played in the background. Donna Lee and Todd sat side by side, opposite their dates. Hallie pulled her chair in, closer to Todd. Steve pulled his closer to Donna Lee. Donna Lee got the hint. Steve was her date, and Hallie was Todd's. Somehow she made it through dinner. All she could think of was Todd. There may as well have been no one else in the room. When the waitress came for her plate, she was surprised to see that half her meal was missing, and she could only assume she'd eaten it. Steve suggested a walk along the waterfront. As they left the restaurant, Donna Lee saw Todd pulling Steve aside. They conducted a low-voiced conversation with frequent glances at the two women. Donna Lee was grateful for the opportunity to speak privately to Hallie.
Don't hate me, she whispered, not knowing how to explain what was happening between her and Todd. You mean because you want my date? Donna Lee had rarely felt so wretched. She couldn't spit out an apology fast enough. But Hallie stopped her before she uttered a word. Don't worry about it. I could see the lay of the land the minute you two recognized each other. I was crazy about him, Hallie. Donna Lee reflected that it hadn't taken long for those old feelings to rekindle. Being with Todd was like peeling back the years and uncovering that vulnerable, yearning girl again.
What terrified her, though, was the knowledge that she could easily fall in love with him. Really in love. Not an adolescent infatuation this time, but adult emotions with all their power and complexity. A minute later, she watched as Todd made his way to her side.
"I squared it with Steve," he said, and reached for her hand, his fingers closing tightly around hers.
"Do you mind if we go our own way? Just the two of us?" Her heart pounded hard.
"What about Hallie?"
"Steve's talking to her now." Donna Lee looked over her shoulder in time to see Hallie grin and wave.
"Have fun, you two!"
she called out cheerfully. Then Steve and Hallie turned and walked in the opposite direction. She swung back and found herself staring into Todd's eyes. This is the way it should have been from the first. Hallie and Steve should be the ones dating, not you and Steve or me and Hallie.
"I think she's half in love with him already," she said.
"Steve's in love with her." Donna Lee wanted to believe that.
"But I thought Steve loves his ex-wife."
Todd hesitated before he answered, as if carefully weighing his response.
"Yeah, I guess he does. I've never understood it. Mary Lynn's selfish and self-centered. I won't say any more because it isn't fair for me to judge someone else's actions or motives."
Donnelly smiled to herself.
"I always admired that about you."
Todd glanced at her.
"Admired what?" "How fair you are. And how generous."
Her answer left him suspiciously quiet.
"I saw you leave the note on my car."
Donnelly felt the color explode in her cheeks, and yet she didn't fear the truth.
"I meant what I said then, and I mean it now."
"I was always sorry I didn't talk to you in the cafeteria that day," he said quietly. "I always had a difficult time talking to girls. Still do."
"You were my first crush," she whispered. "I dreamed about you every night that entire year."
They stopped outside the ferry terminal, the cooler evening wind dancing around them.
"I dreamed of you too, Donnelly."
He repositioned himself so that he stood directly in front of her. With one finger, he raised her chin so their eyes could meet.
"You're trembling." "It must be a chill from the wind,"
she offered the first sane excuse that presented itself. His tattered breath struck her face, as if he'd been unconsciously holding it inside and released it all at once.
"Something very strange is happening. I feel wonderful, and it frightens me. I was married, and the divorce nearly killed me," she said.
"My marriage didn't last a year. I vowed I'd never get involved again."
"And now?" she dared to ask.
"And now?" His expression seemed to say he was as shocked, as wary as she was, and his breathing was ragged.
"I have a cabin," he said, his eyes burning into hers. "Come with me tomorrow. We'll spend the rest of the weekend there." It didn't take Donnelly 2 seconds to decide. "Yes."
"Doesn't that beat all?"
Hallie walked down the waterfront at a good clip, easily outpacing Steve.
"My best friend just stole my blind date."
"In case you hadn't noticed, you aren't exactly building up my self-esteem here, complaining about getting stuck with me."
"I'm not complaining."
She slid her arm through his and pressed her head to his shoulder.
"Oh, you aren't so bad."
Steve snorted. "Your enthusiasm is underwhelming."
"It's just that I'm disappointed for you. I was so sure you and Donna Lee would hit it off. Who would have guessed she'd known Todd in another life? I'd never seen a man fluster Donna Lee like that."
They paused near the waterfront fire station. Suddenly tired, Hallie slumped down on a park bench, as if waiting for a bus. She looked over at the waterfront concessions.
"I wonder if any of them sell double fudge macadamia nut ice cream."
It was that kind of evening.
"Wouldn't vanilla do just as well?"
Steve asked.
"I guess, in a pinch."
"Be right back."
He disappeared and returned a couple of minutes later with 2 hand-dipped, chocolate and nut-covered ice cream bars.
"It was the best I could do."
Hallie gladly accepted the treat.
"I've underestimated you, Maris."
"Hey, I've been telling you that for weeks."
"You don't seem very upset about all this."
He wasn't revealing the slightest regret, while her own ego was scraping bedrock. "Todd going off with Donna Lee works for the best as far as I'm concerned. he muttered, unwrapping his ice cream bar. So we're stuck with each other's company for tonight. You know what? I'm glad.
Hallie sat up a bit taller. Thanks. I needed that.
Was he going to say anything else and ruin the compliment? She braced herself for the insult she was sure would follow. None came.
But,
she prodded, gesturing with her hand for him to finish the thought. He cast her an amused glance.
No buts.
I meant it. Donnelly awoke to the scent of sizzling bacon. Tossing aside the covers, she climbed out of the narrow bed, reached for her robe, and looked over the balcony of the A-frame loft. Todd stood in front of the stove, humming softly while he turned the bacon. Her heart swelled at the sight of him. They'd spent Saturday trout fishing from a canoe. He cooked dinner. Later they'd sat under the stars, talking. And there was no subject they didn't discuss. They'd spent an entire day together, and he hadn't so much as kissed her. When they'd headed into the house for bed, he'd escorted her to the loft, wished her good night, and promptly left. Donnelly had never spent a day she'd enjoyed more. She loved every single second. Her overnight bag sat next to the bed, and she quickly found a fresh T-shirt. Pulling on her jeans, she raced down the stairs barefoot.
"I can't remember when I've slept better,"
she told him, smiling. "There's something about the country air," he said, his gaze approving as she sat down at the table. He carried two glasses of orange juice to the table, and Donnelly found herself watching him. Watching him and loving him. The realization caught her unaware. Love. She was falling in love. "My grandparents always talked about how coming here restored them. After my divorce, Gramp sent me here and said I should stay a week. I stayed 2 months. When I returned to my family, I'd made some basic decisions about my life. For the first time in 15 years, I'm questioning the decision I made that summer. After the failure of my marriage, I decided I'd never love any woman again. I know it sounds pretty melodramatic, but I meant it. And not once in all the years since have I been tempted to change my mind. Until now." Donnelly pushed herself away from the table, then walked outside. She stood on the porch, head bent, staring at the cedar planks. "Donnelly." He followed her out. His voice was rough, almost sorrowful. "I apologize. I should never have said that."
"Did you mean it?"
she asked, her own voice barely above a whisper. "Yes." "Does that bother you?" he asked. "What I said?"
"No. It makes my heart glad."
Todd slid his arms around her and brought her close. Then Donnelly kissed him. That first kiss was soft, tentative, yet full of raw, hungry need. Her whole body began to tremble. She gripped his collar, crushing the material, holding on to it as if this was all that kept her from being swept away by a raging storm. Todd bunched the material of her T-shirt at the small of her back. "Do you know what you're starting?" he asked. Then, not giving her time to respond, he asked another question. "Are you sure this is what you want?" She felt his muscles tense with restraint.
"Yes, I know. I'm sure."
When he did fully claim her lips, she nearly fainted. One kiss, one deep kiss, and she was hot and restless. So very restless. She wasn't alone. Donnelly could feel his need. It shuddered through his body and hers. This urgency was far too potent so early in their relationship. Things were moving too fast. They kissed until Donnelly felt she'd die if he didn't make love to her. When he wrenched his mouth from hers, she begged him without words to go on. He could have carried her into his bedroom, her head clouded with passion, and taken her right then and there. Instead, he stopped, giving her the opportunity to end their passion now if she had any hesitations, making sure she wanted him as badly as he wanted her. She smiled and kissed him softly and slowly, thoroughly.
"Don't stop. I want you. So very much."
This was apparently all the reassurance he needed. He swung her into his arms, made straight for his bedroom, where he gently placed her on the mattress. They spent the day there. All day. Steve was astonished how quiet the house was after the kids returned to Mary Lynn. He loved his children to distraction, and he'd enjoyed the 2 weeks they'd spent with him. Yet in the past year, he'd learned to appreciate solitude, too. He was grateful Megan and Kenny had adapted so well to their new circumstances, and grateful that he and Mary Lynn had been able to maintain civility in their dealings. If he was making a list of things to be grateful for, Steve figured he should include Hallie. She'd come to his aid more times than he could count, especially during the past couple of weeks. Thinking back, he realized that Megan and Kenny had spent nearly as much time at her place as they had at his. Standing in front of his refrigerator, Steve surveyed the contents, wondering what he could rustle up for dinner. Cooking for one didn't excite him. Briefly, he wondered what Hallie was eating. More often than not these past 2 weeks, she'd either cooked or joined him and the kids for dinner, and he'd come to rely on her suggestions. Steve glanced out the window to see if she was home. Feeling a bit like a peeping Tom, he focused on her kitchen window. Ah, yes, there she was, talking on the phone. She had the cord wrapped about her wrist, and from the way she leaned against the wall, he could tell she was annoyed about something. After a moment, she hung up, then immediately reached for the phone again. His own phone rang, and he jerked around. "Hello, Hallie," he answered, thinking himself rather clever. "Guess what?" she said furiously. "Arnold just called to break our date tonight. That's the third time he's canceled out on me at the last minute, the low-down dirty rat. The thing is, I've got 2 perfectly good theater tickets, which I refuse to waste."
"Maybe you can exchange the tickets for another night and go with Arnold then."
"I don't ever plan to see Arnold again. I told him so. He even seemed relieved when I told him." She paused long enough to catch her breath. "Anyway, I can't exchange them, and I don't want to waste them." He was afraid she planned to ask him and groaned inwardly at the thought. It had been a long, hard day, and he wasn't interested in sitting through a play.
"What about Donnelly and Todd?" he tried.
"Donnelly and Todd? You're joking, right?"
"I guess I am."
Hallie was right. Those two were in their own little world. Every morning of the past week, Todd had arrived at the office wearing a silly grin. Silly, perhaps, but also satisfied. Steve had never seen a man so much in love.
"Can you go with me?" Hallie pleaded. "Please, please come with me."
It was one of the rare times she'd requested anything of him. Steve realized he didn't have the heart to refuse her.
"How formal is it?"
"You'd need to wear a suit, dark if you have one."
"I do."
"Does that mean you'll go?"
Steve paused and reminded himself of all the times Hallie had come to his rescue.
"I guess."
"A little enthusiasm would go a long way, Maris." Steve grinned.
"I'm beginning to think Arnold might have the right idea."
"I think not." 7:30.
"Okay, you're on."
When he arrived to pick up Hallie, he did a double take. The deep blue dress, slinky, silky, and body-hugging, did incredible things for her figure. He released a low whistle.
"You like it?"
Hallie turned in a slow circle to give him the full effect.
"Wow."
He'd have whistled a second time if he'd found the breath to do so. But she'd stolen it. Telling her she looked good was an understatement. Arnold was more of a fool than Steve had realized. "You look..." All descriptive words and phrases deserted him.
"Fat,"
she supplied. She pouched out her stomach, what there was of it, which to his mind wasn't much.
"No!"
He'd never been a flatterer, and he'd always struggled with compliments. Hallie waited expectantly.
"You look wonderful."
It was the best he could do. He paused and waited for some sign of reaction. She closed her eyes and exhaled.
"Really wonderful,"
he added, hoping that would help.
"Thank you."
She smiled softly.
"You can be a real charmer when you want to be, Maris."
Him? A charmer? Not likely. But if Hallie wanted to think so, he wasn't going to correct her. The play was at the Fifth Avenue Theater in downtown Seattle. The theater darkened and the play began. It didn't take Steve long to realize it wasn't a play at all. It was an opera. All the lines were sung. He opened his program and read it for the first time. He didn't recognize the opera's title, but it was clearly German. Steve liked classical music as much as the next guy, but this was no Mozart. The composer wasn't one he knew or cared to. Hallie's rapt attention was focused on the stage. As far as Steve could figure, the opera was some tragedy that had people running back and forth across the stage. There were frequent deaths, too, but not frequent enough. By the end of the first scene, Steve's attention began wandering. He studied the lovely crystal light fixtures suspended from the ceiling, craning his head back as far as possible to get a better view. The theater had recently been renovated, and he was impressed with the improvements.
Steve!
Hallie was frowning at him.
Is something wrong?
Nah, just checking out the new fixtures, he whispered loudly.
I wonder if they're real crystal. You wouldn't happen to know, would you?
I wouldn't know. Hallie rolled her eyes and reverted her attention to the stage. Quickly bored, Steve asked her for a pen. Once she'd retrieved her pen, she placed it in his hand with just a hint of impatience. Steve doodled geometric designs across the front page of the program and then found himself drawing what resembled, he hated to admit it, a series of female breasts. Actually, he was surprised by how good he was. Years earlier, he'd visited an art museum where he'd seen a painting by one of the century's more revered artists. All he'd seen was a clothes hanger with two misshapen boobs. And yet the artist had made millions. Steve toyed with the idea of sending his doodles to the artist's agent. Perhaps this was his life's calling, and he'd make a fortune drawing breasts. With that thought in mind, he drew a torso and gave the woman four breasts with multiple nipples. Hallie glanced over at what he was doing, gasped, and grabbed the program away from him. Okay, okay, he got the hint. Steve tried to pay attention to the actors, he really did, but he'd rarely seen anything this boring. Opera had never appealed to him. Large women who wore helmets with horns stormed across the stage, holding spears and pretending to be warriors. After a while, sure that Hallie was absorbed in the acting, he stole her program and folded it into a paper airplane. He had no intention of flying it, but apparently Hallie assumed otherwise. Her expression would have cracked concrete.
What?
He asked under his breath.
You have to ask, she hissed.
Hands lightly folded in his lap, he focused his attention on the stage again, determined to be a model member of the audience. His eyes drifted closed, and he found himself falling asleep. The curtain fell and the lights went up. Intermission. Free at last. He all but leapt out of his seat. I'll get us something to drink. He was halfway into the aisle when Hallie thrust out an arm and stopped him.
What's the matter with you?
She demanded. He knew he was in trouble.
Nothing,
he insisted brightly.
This work is masterful, brilliant,
boring, he said. For you, perhaps, but not everyone agrees. Kenny would do a better job of paying attention.
Furthermore, what was that you were drawing?
Steve buried his hands in his pockets and shrugged. I don't know. I was doodling. I'll be better the second half, I promise.
Never mind, let's go home.
She didn't elaborate. His heart filled with gratitude. But once they'd walked down the large curved stairway and outside into the cool evening, he realized this reprieve might well have come at a price.
You aren't angry, are you?
He asked.
I'm not angry, she replied.
We can stay. He looked at her intently. Hallie was a good friend, and if keeping the peace meant enduring the rest of this opera, then he'd do it. Then Steve recognized the truth. Hallie had been as bored as he was.
You didn't like that opera either.
His step lightened as he cast her a smug look.
That's not true. The music was...
Don't lie, Hallie, or your nose will start to grow. A smile quivered at the corners of her mouth, struggling to break free.
Be honest.
She took one glance at him and burst out laughing. The mirth virtually exploded from her. She wrapped her arms around her middle and bent nearly double. Still laughing, she positioned herself in front of him on the sidewalk, strolling backward as she spoke.
I wish you could have seen yourself.
I'm glad I'm such a source of amusement. A smile threatened to overtake him, too. He took her hand, gripping it firmly in his own. It felt right to be walking hand in hand with Hallie. Hallie arrived home late that Friday afternoon. Donna Lead arrived at work unannounced, wearing a lovely diamond engagement ring. Hallie had hugged and congratulated her, thrilled for her friend. Megan and Kenny raced toward her the moment she'd parked.
Dad's taking us to the drive-in,
Kenny said excitedly.
You want to come?
Megan asked.
Please, please, please come, said a voice from behind.
She swung around to find Steve gazing at her with an exaggerated expression of woe.
I promised the kids last week that I'd take them, and they invited 10 or 15 of their closest friends along.
Two,
Megan corrected, rolling her eyes.
We each invited one friend.
I've got it all figured out. Steve squeezed Hallie's shoulders. We can take both cars and park next to each other. The kids can stay in my car, and I'll come over and join you in yours. Does that sound like a plan or what?
It was easy to see what would happen to his escape strategy if she refused. He'd be trapped in a vehicle filled with 4 shrieking kids. If the truth be known, she wasn't at all opposed. Yes, she felt exhausted, but being with Steve and his children had a way of reviving her. If she didn't go, she was likely to drown her sorrows in a bowl of double fudge macadamia nut ice cream, something to be avoided at all costs. Besides, Steve had kissed her when he'd walked her to her door on Monday night. A quick, friendly kiss. But Hallie had felt that kiss all the way to her toes. A nice, friendly goodnight between neighbors shouldn't curl a woman's toes. She wanted him to kiss her again, just to check things out.
Dad's going to make popcorn,
Kenny said breathlessly, as if that qualified his father for some major cooking award.
And not use the microwave!
There was real awe in the boy's voice.
Dad explained that when he was a kid, you used a stove.
Hallie remembered making popcorn that way, too. She felt about 100 years old. Oh, all right. Although she made it sound like a sacrifice, Hallie found herself grinning. I'll change out of my work clothes and be right over. Megan followed her into the house and helped her choose a pair of shorts and a summer top.
I'm glad you're coming,
she said, hopping onto the end of Hallie's bed. Hallie noticed that the girl looked unhappy, but didn't want to pry. I'm glad I'm coming, too.
Daddy let me invite Angie. She's my best friend. Everyone needs a best friend.
She paused.
I think you're Dad's.
Hallie was touched. Your dad's one of my best friends, too. The girl was quiet for several moments while Hallie changed out of her business garb and donned what she thought of as real people clothes.
I don't think Mom and Kip are happy.
The softly spoken statement came out of the blue. Hallie paused, wondering how or if she should comment. Sometimes when people first marry, they have difficulty adjusting to each other. Give them time, Megan.
I don't think time's going to help. Mom found out that Kip's been married before. Twice. She only knew about one ex-wife.
Oh, dear. Hallie immediately sympathized with Steve's ex. If Kip had misled Mary Lynn in a matter of this importance, Hallie had to wonder if he was trustworthy in other areas.
Dad doesn't know,
Megan added. Don't worry, sweetheart. I won't tell him. The girl gave her a fierce hug. Megan and her friend rode with Hallie, while Steve led the way with the two boys. As planned, they parked at the drive-in theater side by side. Once the radios were fine-tuned, Steve left his vehicle and climbed into the front seat of Hallie's. It looked like a perfect plan. Until Kenny and his friends started fighting with the girls. Megan rolled down her window and shouted,
Kenny ate all his popcorn and he's trying to steal mine! And mine!
Angie chimed in furiously. Steve managed to keep the peace, then grinned as he sat back.
I can't believe I allowed the kids to talk me into this. It isn't just the drive-in movie, either. Tomorrow is Kenny's Cub Scout camp out. I actually volunteered to spend the night in the woods with 10 9-year-old boys.
Better you than me, Hallie told him. All was blissfully quiet as the children gazed at the huge screen.
What I'd really like to know is how I got talked into this slumber party business.
Megan asked if Angie could come to the drive-in, then the next thing I know, Kenny's got a friend and they're both spending the night.
Don't look at me,
Hallie said, eating her popcorn. I'm an innocent bystander. He chuckled and helped himself to a handful from her bag.
You talked to Todd recently?
She asked as the opening credits scrolled down the screen.
Yeah. He told me he asked Donnelly to marry him. But I have to say it didn't come as any surprise. Todd's so tired he can barely stay awake.
What does Donnelly do? Keep him up all night?
My guess is they're keeping each other up.
Hallie put down her popcorn.
You know what? We're both so damn jealous we can barely stand it.
Amen,
Steve said. They glanced at each other and broke into peals of laughter. Hallie was enjoying herself, and it had very little to do with the movies. It was refreshing, she told herself solemnly, when a man and a woman could be friends. She turned to Steve.
Thank you for being my friend, she whispered.
Thank you for being mine. And then he leaned over and kissed her. His mouth grazed hers and lingered. Hallie kissed him back, increasing the pressure. She felt the sexual energy of the kiss immediately, and so apparently did Steve. He bolted upright and looked at her long and hard. She studied him, too. It was as if all the oxygen in the car was suddenly gone. Neither seemed capable of breathing, let alone talking. The only illumination came from the screen, but it was enough for Hallie to see Steve's face. His eyes were wary, as if to say he wasn't sure about any of this. For that matter, Hallie wasn't sure how she felt either.
At last he spoke.
Hallie?
Yes. Her voice seemed distant.
What just happened?
You're asking me?
She tried to make a joke of it and found she couldn't.
We kissed and... And it was good. Really good.
As if he needed to test this new discovery, he placed his hands on the curve of her shoulders and leaned forward to press his mouth to hers. Hallie closed her eyes, but her mind and her heart were wide open, eagerly anticipating a repeat performance. At first he was gentle, almost tentative. Her lips parted, welcoming him. The nature of the kiss shifted almost immediately. His mouth grew fierce, demanding. He angled his lips over hers, urgently dragging her as close as the confines of the car would allow. Hallie wanted, no, needed, his kiss. She forgot who she was, where she was. Nothing mattered but Steve. She could feel the beat of his heart throbbing beneath her palm. It was a sensual storm that left both of them panting and breathless. Abruptly, he broke it off and braced his forehead against hers. His breath ragged. Hallie's breath fled entirely. When he kissed her again, it was slow and gentle, the way their first experimental kisses had been months earlier. He tasted of buttered popcorn. He tasted incredible. Long, deep, slow kisses came next. When he stopped, breathing hard, Hallie fell against the back of the seat. Her eyes closed.
Tell me this isn't real.
It's real.
Tell me we're all wrong for each other.
You know better.
She tried again. Tell me this is just our reaction to what's happening between Donnelly and Todd.
It isn't. This is real, Hallie.
You and me.
It's as real as it's likely to get.
How can we have been so blind? This was fantastic. Steve. Steve Maris. For months she had been conducting this fruitless search to find a man, and Steve had been there all along, right next door. It was crazy. No, she was. Throwing her arms around his neck, she whispered, I might be a slow learner, but I'm ready to make up for lost time.
He laughed. Then he kissed her cheek, her nose, as he slowly, methodically worked his way back to her lips. Hallie had waited and waited for the right man. What a fool she'd been not to realize all along that he lived next door. I can't believe this is happening, she said in a low voice. Believe it, Hallie. Believe it. She bit her lip as he continued to caress her. Uh-oh, Steve murmured, his voice weighted with frustration. I'm afraid we have an audience.
What?
He tipped his head toward the car with the kids. Hallie looked and found four pairs of eyes staring at them out the side windows. Apparently she and Steve were putting on a much better show than the one on the screen. When Kenny saw that he had their attention, he waved. Hallie and Steve waved back. She could feel the heat rise in her cheeks. Steve lowered the window, which had steamed up considerably, something for which Hallie was grateful.
Are you kids ready to go home?
This question was followed by a long chorus of no's.
Then you'd better watch the movie.
Dad! Were you kissing Hallie?
Kenny sounded genuinely distressed.
On the lips?
He cringed, as if he couldn't imagine anything more revolting.
She's not so bad, Steve said casually.
Hallie elbowed him in the ribs.
He greatly exaggerated his reaction, and everyone, including Hallie, laughed. Once they were sure the kids had returned their attention to the movie, Steve raised the window. He gripped her hand tightly in his, lacing their fingers. He stared straight ahead, but she knew he wasn't watching the screen.
Okay, tell me. Where do we go from here?
She knew exactly what he was asking.
Are you asking me to go to bed with you, Steve?
Yes.
She swallowed. We need a dose of what Donnelly and Todd have been experiencing, right?
No.
She was taken aback by the vehemence of his response. This has nothing to do with Donnelly and Todd, and everything to do with you and me. I knew something was happening between us long ago. At least I suspected it. And it scared the living daylights out of me.
I'm scared, too.
He looked at her, and as their eyes met, Hallie saw the hunger in his, realizing it was a reflection of her own. She wanted him, needed him. Steve lowered his mouth to hers and kissed her with an unconcealed desire.
Does that tell you anything?
He asked.
Yes.
Her heart refused to slow down. She felt she was about to dissolve into hysterical tears or laughter. She didn't know which. The pendulum could swing either way. Steve stroked the side of her face, his eyes full of wonder.
I love you, Hallie.
Tears. The pendulum swung to tears. They instantly filled her eyes and spilled down her cheeks.
Oh, Steve, I love you too,
she sobbed, her shoulders shaking with emotion. Then why are you crying?
Because it took me so long to see the truth. Because I'm so happy. Because, oh, I don't know.
He raised her hand to his lips and kissed her palm.
Like you said earlier, we're going to make up for lost time. Tonight, Hallie. I'm not going to wait a moment longer.
Tonight?
As soon as this movie's over, we'll drive home. I'll get everyone to bed, and the minute they're asleep, I'll sneak over to your house. Even though Megan and Kenny have friends over, it shouldn't take them long to crash.
He sounded so eager.
Just as eager as she was. Her heart pounded with anticipation.
Last January, I bought myself a sexy silk nightgown, she whispered. I never dreamed I'd be wearing it for you.
Steve groaned. Hallie, if you want me to make love to you right here and now, just go on. Otherwise, kindly be quiet.
I don't think I can be quiet. I'm too excited.
He kissed her again and again, and she knew he would have continued if not for the carload of kids parked next to them. The movie seemed to last forever. The instant the credits began, Steve kissed her and leapt out of the car and into his own. He broke the speed limit all the way home. It was a minor miracle, and neither one of them got a ticket. When they arrived, Steve ushered the kids into the house.
What's the hurry, Dad?
Megan complained. He didn't answer her. Don't take time to clean out the car now, he ordered. We'll do that in the morning.
But you always say we shouldn't put something off we can do now,
Kenny whined. I lied, Steve said, propelling his son forward by the shoulders. To bed, everyone. It's late and we've got a big day tomorrow. Once he'd herded the kids into the house, he raced outside where Hallie was waiting. Give me 20 minutes. Half an hour tops, all right?
Half an hour?
It sounded like an eternity. I'll sing them lullabies, read them stories. The second their eyes are closed, I'm out of there. He kissed her, then rushed back into the house. If she had that much time, Hallie was determined to make use of every minute. First, she filled the bathtub with hot water and poured in an exotic mixture of scented oils. Then she stripped out of her clothes and sank neck deep into the water. Closing her eyes, she dreamed of Steve. Steve. She loved him. Really loved him. It astonished her that she hadn't recognized it earlier. Drying herself with a thick, soft towel, she pulled on the slinky silk nightgown, then checked her reflection in the mirror. She liked what she saw, and knew Steve would, too. Tonight, she was a beautiful, alluring woman. Tonight, she would give Steve her body, as well as her heart. Time to set the scene. First, she remade the bed with fresh sheets and her best quilt, and squirted her favorite cologne around the bedroom. She scattered dried rose petals on the antique white quilt. Glancing at the clock on her nightstand, she realized he'd arrive any minute. Once she'd settled herself on the bed, she decided to pose for him like a tigress on the prowl, the way she'd seen women pictured on calendars.
She made a small, growling noise deep in her throat. She held that position for all of 3 minutes before her knee gave out. 35 minutes had passed. She was ready. More than ready. But Steve had yet to arrive. She paced. She stewed. She peeked. One look at his place showed the lights were still on. Hallie thought she saw Kenny race out of the kitchen, and she definitely heard Steve yell after him. So he'd take a few extra minutes. That was all right by her. Their first time together would be perfect. Steve wanted it as much as she did. She yawned and decided to lie down on the sofa to wait for him. When she heard him opening the door, she'd leap up and race into the bedroom, assume the role of tigress, and let him find her on the bed, hungry for her mate. Sleepy, she leaned her head back against the sofa. It had been such a long day. Soon her eyes were drifting shut. She struggled to keep them open, but to no avail. She'd hear Steve, she told herself, and if she did fall asleep, he'd wake her. He didn't. Hallie woke at first light, shivering, still on the sofa. Steve Maris had stood her up. Hallie's Journal, August 17th. If I wasn't so damn much in love with Steve Maris, I'd be furious. But I'm not. I found the sweetest note taped to my front door this morning. Poor Steve. If I was frustrated and disappointed, he was possibly even more so. The kids outlasted him. What's really killing him is that he promised to go on Kenny's camp out. I never expected love to feel like this. I get teary-eyed just thinking about Steve. And at the same time, I want to throw out my arms and sing, sort of like Julie Andrews in the opening scene from The Sound of Music. How easy it is to envision myself spending the rest of my life with him. He's fun and witty and irreverent. How come I didn't see it sooner? I've decided that since Steve won't be back from the camping trip until Sunday afternoon, I'll cook a veritable feast for him. I'll serve it wearing my low-cut blouse. Let matters develop from there. I know exactly where they'll lead, too. Ah, well, I still have enough scented rose petals to leave a trail into the bedroom. Although, if his note was anything to go by, he isn't going to need any help finding the way. I hope he enjoys spending time with Kenny and the other boys out in the woods. But I pray he isn't too tired to enjoy what's waiting for him right here at home. Steve lifted his son's sleeping bag out of the trunk of his car, which stood at the curb outside Mary Lynn's. His back hurt. He'd gotten a grand total of maybe 3 hours sleep the entire night, and he was half-starved. He was so eager to get back to Hallie, he almost hopped back into the car and drove off without saying goodbye to Kenny. What he told Hallie about loving her was true, even truer than he'd realized when he said it. He felt like he was 17 all over again. He wondered at what precise moment he'd fallen for her. It didn't matter, he decided. It had happened, and he was head over heels crazy about her. He felt alive and happy, the kind of happy that caused a man to smile from his heart outward. His mind raced as he neared home. He parked the car and headed directly for Hallie's, pounding on her front door. He smelled of campfire smoke, sweat, and God knew what else, but he didn't care. He needed to kiss her, tell her he was home, hold her, if only for a moment. She swung open the door. "Am I forgiven?" he asked, barely giving her time to let the fact that he was standing there register. The screen door was still between them. "That depends." "On what?" "On how long it takes you to kiss me, you fool." He almost tore the screen door off its hinges in his haste. Hallie gave a soft cry of welcome and threw herself into his embrace. He locked both arms around her waist and hauled her against him, savoring her warmth, breathing in her feminine scent. He dreamed of this moment, anticipated it every second he'd been tramping through the woods with 10 Cub Scouts. Generally, he liked the outdoors, but this time his mind and heart had been with Hallie. Their kiss was long and slow, filled with the wonder of their newly discovered love. He wanted her to know the depth of his frustration, his profound need for her. His blood quickly fired to life, and it demanded every ounce of restraint he possessed not to make love to her right then and there. He buried his face in the curve of her shoulder, thinking her love was the closest thing to heaven he was likely to find. Already it was healing him. Already he'd felt its effects. Her love was a gift he wouldn't abuse or accept lightly. "I cooked you dinner. Roast chicken,"
She said this as if it had some significance.
I'm hungry enough to eat it, too, he said, and kissed the tip of her nose.
Hey, I'll have you know I've taken cooking classes.
Then feed me, woman.
They kissed again with an intensity that all but consumed them. When they drew apart, Steve noticed that his beard had chafed her face. I'll be right back, he promised, setting her on her feet.
That's what you said the last time.
Not to worry. Nothing's going to keep me away again.
I'm glad to hear it. She smiled, a smile he could get lost in. Maybe it wasn't such a good idea to come here first. Leaving her even for 10 or 15 minutes was proving damn difficult. He was halfway between their houses when she called out,
In case you've forgotten, you told me you'd marry a woman who could cook you a decent roast chicken dinner.
He froze.
Marry you?
She planted her hands on her hips and narrowed her eyes.
You're going to marry me, Steve Maris, if I have to hogtie you and drag you down the aisle myself.
He laughed and hurried into the house. He walked into the bathroom, stripped off his clothes, and stepped into the shower. The minute the warm spray hit his skin, he felt worlds better. They had a lot to discuss, he and Hallie. He loved her. That much he knew. Out of the shower, he stood in front of the bathroom mirror with a towel around his waist and shaved a 2-day growth of beard from his face. He slapped some cologne on his face, dressed, grabbed a bottle of white wine from the fridge, and hurried back to her house. He entered without knocking. Hallie stood by the table, smiling when he walked inside. She glowed with happiness, and he felt it as keenly as he did the warmth of the sun.
Welcome back,
she said, sounding almost shy. She looked good. She wore a scoop-necked, full-length summer dress and sandals. It was plain to see she'd gone to a lot of trouble with this dinner. Flowers, crystal wine glasses, and linen napkins. It was a nice feeling, knowing she'd done all this for him. Steve looked into the kitchen. The chaos was daunting. Judging by the stack of pots and pans, she used every cooking dish she owned. There's dessert, too, she promised in a low, sexy voice that made his blood percolate in his veins. I have a feeling it is an apple pie. As he opened the wine, he noticed a trail of rose petals leading out of the dining room and down the hallway. What's that? He asked, pointing. Dessert, she answered, smiling. He followed the fragrant dried flowers as far as her bedroom. Pausing in the doorway, he saw that the top of her bed was covered with a whole slew of petals. Smack dab in the middle was the sexiest cream-colored silk nightgown he'd ever laid eyes on. Do you actually think you're going to have time to put that on?
No, but I wanted you at least to see it.
He brought her into his arms and debated making love to her right then. But considering the effort involved in preparing the dinner, he didn't want anything to spoil it. You aren't going to need that gown or anything else, Hallie, he whispered before he kissed her. This story is continued on the other side of the cassette. He left the bedroom reluctantly. Hoping to speed matters along, he tried to help her get dinner on the table, but she wouldn't let him. She took a green salad out of the refrigerator, tossing it with oil and vinegar, then removed the chicken and baked potatoes from the oven. The scent of rosemary and sage bread dressing drifted through the house. Weren't you the one who told me the old saying's true, that the way to a man's heart is through his stomach? She asked. You already have my heart, Hallie. Surely she knew that. She held out her hand, inviting him to her table. He poured the wine and remembered to pull out her chair before he seated himself. Hallie served him, complimented him on his choice of wine, and then waited for him to take the first bite, watching him carefully. For effect, he closed his eyes and kissed his fingertips. Perfect, he said. The best I've ever tasted. She sampled a tiny, cautious bite. Her eyes met his.
It is good, she said, sounding bewildered. It's really good.
Steve ate 2 huge servings, then helped her clear the table. She stood with her back to him, facing the kitchen counter. He moved directly behind her. She smelled faintly of roses and a variety of herbs and spices. The mixture wasn't one he'd find at a perfume counter, but it had an immediate effect on him. He rubbed against her,
leaving her in no doubt about his state of arousal. She hesitated, then turned around to face him. A frenzy of deep kisses followed, mingled with a sense of breathless wonder. Steve was about to lift her into his arms and carry her into the bedroom when the phone rang. They stopped and stared at each other.
"Don't answer it," he said.
"It's my mother,"
Hallie whispered, pressing her forehead against his shoulder.
"She wants to know how the chicken turned out. If I don't answer it now, she'll phone back later, like in 10 minutes.
"Hello?"
Hallie's eyes zeroed in on his.
"It's Megan," she said, handing him the phone. "She needs to talk to you right away."
Steve took the receiver.
"Megan, is something wrong?"
"I'm sorry to bother you, Dad, but there wasn't any answer at your place, and I thought Hallie might know where you were."
"It's all right, honey. Just tell me what's wrong."
"It's Mom."
Steve heard the worry and fear in his daughter's voice.
"What's the matter with her?"
"I don't know. She won't tell me. But she can't seem to stop crying. I don't know what to do anymore. She said she won't talk to anyone but you. I need you, Daddy. I don't know what to do. Kenny made sandwiches for dinner, but Mommy won't stop crying or let us come into her bedroom."
Steve swallowed a groan. Megan begged him to help her. He couldn't be Hallie's passionate lover while knowing his kids were feeling scared and alone.
"Dad, I don't know what to do."
"Honey, I'll be right over."
"You're leaving?"
Hallie couldn't believe her ears. For the second time in as many days, Steve was walking out on her. Her chest tightened with a growing sense of frustration and anger.
"Hallie, it isn't like I want to go."
It helped her to hear the regret in his voice, but not enough.
"Why? What is it this time?"
Hallie's knees felt as if they were about to buckle, and she lowered herself onto a kitchen chair.
"It's Mary Lynn, isn't it?"
"Yes." At least she should be grateful he hadn't lied.
"I see."
"Hallie, trust me. Walking out on you now is the last thing I want."
"Then don't go."
Her voice was high-pitched and mildly hysterical.
"I have to."
Megan sounded near panic. "This has never happened before." He knelt in front of her and gripped her hands tightly in his.
"I'll be back, I promise. And then we can talk. Just remember, it's you I love."
Hallie desperately wanted to believe him, but she'd been a fool before and was determined not to repeat the same mistakes.
"I don't want to argue about this. If you feel it's necessary to go, then you should."
His relief was evident. "I'll be back before you know I'm gone." Steve was furious by the time he'd arrived at Mary Lynn's. He had to hand it to his ex-wife. Her timing was incredible. The very last thing he'd wanted to do was walk out on Hallie just then. He slammed the car door and marched up the front walk, taking the steps two at a time. He almost walked in without ringing the doorbell, something he was prone to forget since he'd once lived in this house. As soon as Megan opened the door, she hugged him tight, obviously relieved to have him there.
"I'm so glad you came, Daddy. I didn't know what to do."
"It's all right, sweetheart.
Where's your mother?" he asked Megan.
"In the bedroom."
She pointed toward it as if he needed directions. He didn't.
"Sweetie, I'm sure everything will work out. You eat something now, and I'll go talk to your mom."
He hurried to the bedroom, knocked once, then entered. Mary Lynn was lying face down on the bed, sobbing steadily. She raised her head to see who it was. When she saw him, she cried out, flung herself from the bed, and ran into his arms.
"I'm so glad you came,"
she wailed.
"Oh, Steve, I don't know what to do."
In all the years he'd been married to Mary Lynn, he'd never seen her this distraught. Megan was right to be concerned. He wrapped his arms around her, and they both sat on the edge of the bed.
"What's wrong?"
Her crying subsided to soft sniffles.
I'm such a fool. Oh, Steve, how could I have been so incredibly stupid? It's Kip. He lied to me. I learned he'd been married twice before. He didn't tell me about his second wife. I found out by accident.
opened some mail. He has a little girl by that marriage. She's barely 2 years old. I think I married a man who's already married.
It took a moment for the meaning of her words to sink in. You mean to say Kip never divorced his second wife?
I talked to her myself, and she told me he didn't. So I asked Kip if I could see his divorce decree, and he couldn't find it. He tried to tell me he'd gotten a divorce in Vegas. I said if that was true, he should be able to produce the documents, and he couldn't.
Oh, Mary Lynn, I'm sorry.
We had a terrible argument, and he walked out. I don't think he'll be back. I'm not sure I even want him back. Oh, Steve, how am I ever going to face my friends? What will I tell my family? I feel like such a fool.
His ex-wife gazed up at him with wide, appealing eyes.
You'd never have done anything like this to me. You were always a good husband.
If that was the case, he wondered why she'd been so quick to divorce him. He continued to hold her because that was what she seemed to need. Really, there was nothing else he could do. Kneeling on the bed, Mary Lynn placed her arms around his neck and pressed her head to his shoulder.
Hold me, Steve. Please, for just a little longer.
Everything will work out, he reassured her, repeating the words he'd said to Megan. Kip will be back, and you two can sort all this out. You loved him enough to marry him, didn't you?
I've been so foolish.
He wanted to agree with her, but resisted the impulse. Mary Lynn lay back down, and the pressure of her arms still circling his neck pulled him down with her.
Make love to me, Steve. I need you.
He groaned, not with desire, but with anger and frustration. He'd gone through several of the longest and most sexually frustrating months of his life, and in the space of a single day, he had two women wanting him. If it wasn't so ironic, he might have laughed. I don't think that's such a good idea, he said gently, trying not to distress her any more than she already was. Mary Lynn raised her head and kissed him, using every bit of knowledge that their years of marriage had taught her. Steve broke off the kiss. No, Mary Lynn, he said sternly. It isn't going to work for us any longer. You're feeling low and miserable. You don't really want me.
I do, Steve. I want you so much.
It wasn't him she wanted, Steve recognized, but the security his love had always offered her. Come on, Mary Lynn. You're involved with someone else. He nearly made the mistake of saying she was married to someone else, when in all likelihood she wasn't. She sobbed louder and clung to him, refusing to release him.
Lie down with me, please. Is that so much to ask?
He let her direct him downward, back onto the bed. She snuggled close, still sniffling. Steve kept his arm around her, thinking she'd drift off to sleep. The minute she did, he'd slip away.
I don't know why I ever fell for Kip,
she said, apparently needing to talk. He seems all right, Steve muttered.
How could Kip do this to me?
She asked, sounding more and more like a frightened little girl.
Shh.
Steve cradled her head against his shoulder. Go to sleep. The sooner she did, the sooner he'd be free to leave. It wasn't Mary Lynn he wanted to hold, but Hallie. Although his ex-wife was in his arms, the woman he loved was in his thoughts. Her rose-petal-littered bed, the promise of her smile, the joy he felt just thinking about Hallie made him impatient to return to her.
I'm so tired.
So was he, Steve realized with a yawn. After spending a whole night in one huge tent with 10 Cub Scouts, he was exhausted. The 9-year-olds had been up and down until well after 2. Steve didn't get more than a couple of hours sleep, if that. His son had already crashed. Mary Lynn sobbed quietly. Everything will work out, he whispered again. Everything does, sooner or later. He wouldn't have believed it a few months ago, but he did now. Mary Lynn's decision to file for divorce had drastically changed the course of his life. For a time, his pride, his ego, his sense of who and what he was had suffered one hell of a beating. It had taken damn near a year to fight his way back, to rise above the shock and the rejection. It had hurt even more when she remarried. But her marriage, above anything else, had helped him face the truth. It was over for them. He loved her, yes. A part of him always would. She was the mother of his children, his first love. But their marriage was over, dead and buried. Accepting that had probably taken much longer than it should have. But he'd felt like he was fighting for his family, for the dream of what it could have been. He didn't blame Mary Lynn for the failure of their marriage, nor did he accept full responsibility himself. Despite his best efforts to keep his family intact, the divorce had happened, and he couldn't turn back the clock. Steve loved Hallie now. He wasn't sure about leaping into another marriage, but he knew her well enough to realize she wouldn't take anything less. The two of them could discuss that later. Mary Lynn released a long, wobbly sigh. Her shoulders trembled and her grip about him tightened, as though she feared he was about to leave her. He would eventually, but only after she fell asleep. He battled back his own fatigue and decided to rest his eyes, but only for a minute. 1 minute. The next thing he knew, Kenny was standing over him.
Dad?
Steve's eyes flew open. Steve sat up and tried to focus on his wristwatch. What time is it?
6. In the morning?
Kenny nodded. Steve cursed under his breath and bolted off the bed. He was going to have one hell of a time explaining this to Hallie. Hallie didn't think she'd ever spent such a terrible night. Every hour or so, she leapt out of bed convinced she'd heard Steve's car. Not until after 3 did she finally acknowledge that he wasn't coming, that he'd spent the night with Mary Lynn. His ex-wife had claimed she needed him, and he rushed to her side, deserting Hallie. It didn't take a rocket scientist to realize this wasn't going to change. If she and Steve were to become involved, she'd better accept his feelings for the other woman now. As the clock ticked on and the minutes rolled by, she fumed. The night was spent tossing and turning and trembling. She trembled like someone who'd almost made one of the biggest mistakes of her life. At 5, she gave up the effort, threw aside the sheets and got up. She showered, changed into her work clothes, and brewed herself a pot of coffee. She was going to need it. Sitting at her kitchen table, she wrote in her journal, spelling out her grief and anger, when a loud knock sounded at her front door. It was Steve. It amazed her how calm she was. Whatever emotion was left in her had burned itself out during the endless night. Steve's eyes widened with surprise when he saw her. "You're up. I wasn't sure if I'd get you out of bed or not." It was all too apparent that he'd recently come from one, Hallie noted. "Hallie, I'm so sorry." He held out his hand in a gesture of hope, a request for understanding. "You have every reason to be furious. But if you'll let me explain..."
"I'm not angry," she said, interrupting him.
"You're not?" He paused and sniffed the air. "Is that coffee? I could use a cup." "Help yourself." She motioned toward the kitchen. He walked past her and took a mug down from her cupboard. After he'd finished pouring, he turned and leaned back against the counter. His eyes held hers. "I can imagine what you're thinking."
"I doubt that."
She folded her arms and stood on the other side of the room, distancing herself from him physically and emotionally. "Mary Lynn found out some distressing news about Kip. I've never seen her this distraught."
"And so you spent the night with her? You slept with her?"
He practically admitted as much.
"No."
He said it with such vehemence that for one tiny instant she almost believed him.
"Yes, I slept with her," he corrected. "But I didn't sleep with her."
He stopped abruptly and shook his head in unmistakable anger.
"All right. We were in the same bed, but..."
"Please, spare me the details." Her stomach was already in knots, and she wasn't up to listening to a lengthy explanation.
He'd been with Mary Lynn, and not her. And damn it all, that hurt. It isn't as bad as it looks.
Steve's gaze held hers, refusing to let go.
Perhaps not.
She forced a smile.
But as far as I'm concerned, we were given a reprieve from making a major mistake.
Mistake? She sipped her coffee and prayed she could pull this off.
Yeah.
You've heard what they say about friends and lovers? How sex ruins friendship?
It wouldn't work with us, Steve. You know me too well, and
why wouldn't it work? His eyes narrowed. She saw that his hands tightened around the coffee mug until his knuckles paled with the strength of his grip.
You love Mary Lynn. You've never tried to hide that from me.
I love you. It didn't slip her notice that he made no attempt to deny his feelings for his ex-wife.
I know, she said with an air of frivolity. I love you, too. That's the way it is between friends. Good friends.
We're more than friends.
Perhaps at some point we might have been, but not now.
Steve slammed the mug down on the counter.
Are you telling me you don't want me?
His eyes dared her to contradict him. Hallie had never been a good liar.
Steve, I can see the writing on the wall.
You love her. I was married to her for a long time. I can't turn feelings off like a faucet.
She was frantic and frightened. All I did was hold her.
If you want to crucify me for that, then be done with it.
Hallie countered his anger with a calm serenity. She was your first love, your high school sweetheart, your former wife. It's only natural that she'd continue to have a special place in your heart.
His eyes pierced hers.
I love you. If you'd give me a chance.
She spoke quickly, not allowing him to finish.
She'll always be first with you, Steve, no matter what's happening between us.
I guess what I'm trying to say, obviously not very well, is that I want a man who'll make a wholehearted commitment to me.
A man who'll come to you without a load of emotional garbage from his divorce and two emotionally needy kids.
She hesitated, and then because this seemed the easiest way to put an end to it, she nodded.
Fine.
He opened and closed his fist. But be warned, this Mr. Perfect you're looking for may not exist. Let me know when you're ready for a real man, and not some ideal.
Without a further glance, he marched past her and out the front door.
Friday afternoon, Megan and Kenny stopped by her place. Apparently Steve wasn't home from work yet.
Hi, Hallie,
the girl said, coming in and collapsing onto the sofa. Kenny helped himself to the television remote control.
Mom and Kit made up,
Megan told her. Hallie was pleased to hear it, particularly for the children's sake. She sat down on the sofa between them. I have something to tell you both.
What?
The kids perked up immediately.
I bet you're marrying Dad,
Kenny said. I listed my condo with a real estate agent. At their blank look, she continued. It's up for sale.
Are you moving in with Dad?
No, I'm moving. It had been a difficult decision, one she debated all week. This horrible tension between Steve and her wasn't going away. It would only get more awkward. If she was ever going to find a man to marry, it wouldn't be while she lived next door to the man she already loved.
You're moving?
Megan asked, her voice filled with shock. Eventually, not right away. I have to sell my place first.
But why?
Kenny wailed. She ruffled his hair. She was still struggling with a response when Kenny asked another question.
Does Dad know?
Not yet.
When are you moving?
This time the question was Megan. I don't know, but it probably won't be soon. It doesn't mean you won't see me again. She could tell that neither one believed her, but she meant what she said. She'd come to care deeply for Megan and Kenny and would make every effort to keep them in her life.
It won't be the same around here with you gone.
Steve arrived home as she was trying to reassure the kids. With quick goodbyes, they rushed out the door to join their father. Just as she suspected, it didn't take them long to deliver her news. He was pounding at her front door a minute later.
Is it true?
He demanded brusquely when she opened the door. She nodded. Yes, I put my place on the market. His eyes widened momentarily, and then a slow, sad smile touched his mouth. He buried his hands in his pockets. I wish you well, Hallie McCarthy.
You too, Steve Maris.
He nodded once, then turned and walked away. Hallie's Journal, September 7th. I can't believe this summer is almost over. The most embarrassing thing happened yesterday afternoon. I was standing in line at the bank, not one of my favorite pastimes, and out of the blue, tears appeared in my eyes, and I just couldn't make them go away. I was mortified. It isn't easy to stop loving someone. Which gives me a bit of insight into Steve's continued involvement with his first wife. It'll be better once I've moved. I was so surprised when I received a respectable offer the first week my condo was listed. The deal should close in another week, now that the new owner's financing is approved. I guess I can last another week living next door to Steve. What worries me more is standing next to him at Donnelly's wedding in October. I'm her maid of honor, and Steve is best man. I just pray I don't repeat the scene from the bank. Panting and cursing, Hallie dragged the last box out of the bedroom and into the living room. She'd forgotten how much she hated moving, and this time was the most difficult yet. Physically and emotionally exhausted, she slumped onto the sofa. All she had to do now was wait for the movers. All she had to do now was say goodbye. It was the task she dreaded most. She knew she was going to miss Steve. She missed him already. She'd taken their friendship for granted, and during the past few weeks without him, teasing her, helping her, laughing with her, the world had become a bleak, lonely place. She glanced through the window at Steve's place. One last time. Just her luck to fall in love with a man who had bowling shoes for brains. She wasn't sure if that thought made her want to laugh or cry, or both. Out of the corner of her eye, she saw a flash of color. The moving van had arrived. She opened her front door and secured the screen in the open position. The only thing left to do was step aside and let the brawny young men get to work. Hallie got out of their way. She shuffled aimlessly through the bright leaves that carpeted the lawn. She'd been there for barely a minute when Kenny appeared. He took one look at the movers and charged full speed toward Hallie, arms wide open. She caught the boy in a hug. Kenny wrapped his thin arms around her neck and held on tight.
"Do you have to move, Hallie?"
he pleaded.
"Yes,"
she said, hoping he couldn't hear the tears in her voice.
"I've got an apartment now."
With her condo selling so quickly, she hadn't bought a new place yet.
"Hallie!"
Megan raced across the yard and threw her arms around Hallie, too.
"You're moving already?" "I don't want you to go,"
Kenny said, squeezing her neck harder. Hallie hugged the boy, fighting back the emotion, wanting this to be over quickly because she wasn't sure she could bear much more. After a few moments, she loosened Kenny's arms from around her neck. Straightening, she put an arm around his shoulder and held him close to her side. Megan didn't seem to want to let go of her either.
"We'll never see you again, will we?"
Megan's question was softly spoken.
"Of course you will. Whenever you want. Wherever you want. Just say the word and I'll find a way to be there."
Hallie meant it. "Here." She handed them each a folded piece of paper. "This is my new address and phone number. It's not too far. You can call me any time. And visit, too." Megan read the information, but it didn't appear to satisfy her.
"It won't be the same."
Hallie couldn't argue with that. "No, it won't be the same." The movers had everything she owned loaded in their truck. She checked the condo one last time, to be sure they hadn't missed anything, Megan and Kenny trailing along behind her. When she'd finished, Hallie discovered Steve standing outside. They stared at each other, she on the top step and he on the grass. "Megan and Kenny are with me," she said, thinking he'd come looking for his children. "I know. I thought I'd come and tell you goodbye myself." "Oh." She couldn't think of a single sensible comment. As it was, she had to restrain herself from running into his arms. She ached for him, for his comfort. Her throat hurt from the effort it cost to hold back her tears. Her whole body shook with suppressed longing. This was hell, she decided. Saying goodbye to Steve and his children, walking away, not knowing if she'd ever see him again after Donnelly and Todd's wedding. Hoping, wishing, praying things could be different. And knowing they couldn't.
"We're ready now, miss!"
One of the movers shouted from the cab of the truck. Steve's hands were buried deep in his pockets. "You'd better go." She nodded. Kenny and Megan crowded around her.
"Hallie says we can come visit her new place any time. Can we, Dad?"
His gaze continued to hold hers. If it's okay with Hallie.
I'd like that, Steve. I'm going to miss all of you.
Her original intention had been to say only the children's names, but that would have been a lie. She'd miss him more. She'd mourn him, yearn for him, cry over him, and she would have to face him at the wedding. Her gaze automatically sought him out as the four of them crowded around Pastor Channing in the small chapel. Steve's eyes met hers, and with effort, she managed to offer him a smile, one that wasn't returned. She quickly looked away. The ceremony, short though it was, moved Hallie to tears. Donnelly and Todd gazed at each other, wrapped up in their love. Hallie was thrilled for her friends. Steve stood there stiffly throughout the ceremony. Other than those first few moments, he completely ignored her. When they all signed the wedding certificate, Hallie's hand trembled. Steve showed no sign of emotion, his signature strong and bold. The hotel where the reception was being held was filled with guests by the time they arrived. Applause broke out when Donnelly and Todd stepped inside the gaily decorated room. The reception line was followed by dinner. Hallie and Steve were assigned to the head table with Donnelly and Todd. She found him staring at her once, and she smiled, hoping to lessen the tension between them. She wasn't sure if it was the baked salmon or the champagne that went with it, but Steve finally began to relax. She did, too. Once the staff had removed the dishes and the wedding cake was served, the music started. Donnelly and Todd danced the first dance, holding each other close. As was tradition, Steve escorted Hallie onto the floor next, but from the loose way he held her, she might as well have been his sister. They'd never danced together before. What amazed her was how coordinated their movements were, almost as if they'd been partners for years. When the music ended, she thought she heard Steve sigh with relief. "Come on, Steve. It wasn't so bad, was it?" He stared at her blankly. "Dancing with me?" She elaborated. "Bad enough. I didn't step on your toes, did I?" "No," he muttered. "Just my heart."
"What about my heart?"
she asked, angered by his response. He moved away. A balding, middle-aged man, Todd's uncle by marriage, if Hallie remembered correctly, caught her by the arm.
"How come a pretty little gal like you doesn't have a dance partner?"
He slid his arm securely about her waist as the next song started. Hallie could see that Todd's uncle had had a few drinks too many.
"Excuse me."
Hallie heard Steve's familiar voice behind her.
"I'd like to cut in."
Steve couldn't figure out what had prompted him to rescue Hallie. One thing was sure. The minute she walked into his embrace, he was sorry he'd asked her. Her body, all soft and feminine, gently gliding into his arms, was the purest form of torture he'd ever experienced. Steve closed his eyes. This was heaven. No, it was hell. He didn't want to feel the things he did for this woman, but he had found himself incapable of not feeling them, of forgetting. She haunted his dreams, and seemingly dissatisfied with that, she haunted every waking minute as well. As luck would have it, the music was slow and sultry. He noticed that neither of them felt compelled to speak. Steve suspected he couldn't have gotten a word out, even if he'd known what to say. Hallie in his arms again was enough. It felt incredibly good. Too good. He scowled. She was the one who slammed the door in his face. She was the one who'd put her house on the market and moved. Talk about cutting her losses. With little more than a backward glance, she'd cast him out of her life. Well, a man had his pride, and although it had been mighty cold comfort, he wasn't crawling back to her. No siree, not him. Nor was he interested in a woman who hightailed it out at the first sign of trouble. What irked him most was that their entire argument had centered on Mary Lynn. She'd called him in great relief a few days after her panic attack and told him Kip had gotten the divorce and had shown her the papers to prove it. While he was pleased for Mary Lynn, her news had come too late to help him. He'd already lost Hallie. The music ended, and they'd parted, and both, of their own accord, moved off the dance floor and in different directions. Over the next couple of hours, Steve noticed that Hallie danced with a number of other partners. He stopped counting how many after six. When he couldn't stand to watch any longer, he set his champagne glass aside and strolled across the room to where she was standing. The music had started again, another slow ballad. Wordlessly, he offered her his hand. She hesitated before giving him hers. Then he led the way to the dance floor.
"We already danced," she whispered, sounding nervous.
"Twice." "I know. The first two times were for appearance's sake. This time it's for me."
He brought her close. Close enough to feel her breasts against his chest. Close enough to tell her without words the powerful effect she had on him.
"I was denied the pleasure of making love to you. It seems this may well be my last chance."
While his options were limited, Steve didn't let the mere fact that 200 people were watching stand in his way. His imagination would work just fine. With his mouth close to her ear, he told her in scintillating detail how he'd planned to love her, how he'd dreamed of it every night since, thought of little else but having her in his bed and in his life. While their bodies swayed gently to the music, he held her mesmerized with a whispered account of how he'd intended to satiate their need for each other. Sparing nothing, he told her all they'd missed, all that their pride had cost them. He didn't know that his words were having the desired effect until he heard her soft gasp against his throat. The music ended, but they didn't leave the dance floor, didn't move out of each other's embrace. His arms tightened as he realized that if he lost Hallie this time, he'd forever regret it. He assumed, he hoped, that the music would start again. It didn't. Instead, there was an announcement that Donnelly was about to throw the bridal bouquet. Hallie eased herself out of Steve's arms, keeping her gaze lowered. Steve glanced over his shoulder to discover that a group of eager young women had gathered around Donnelly, jockeying for position. Donnelly stood on tiptoe.
"Hallie! Where are you?"
"I have to go." She moved away from him, joining the entourage crowding the bride. Although Donnelly clearly tried to toss the bouquet in her best friend's direction, murmurs followed as a teenager displayed the prize, waving it exuberantly over her head. When Steve went to look for Hallie again, he discovered she was gone. Gone. The best Steve could figure, she'd disappeared with Donnelly, who had changed out of her wedding dress and into a pretty pink suit before leaving with Todd for the airport. She'd be back, he reassured himself. He could be patient. Considering how long he'd waited already, a few extra minutes wouldn't hurt. Hallie never did return to the reception. Steve realized she had left. He tried to convince himself. It was over. That was the way she wanted it. From this point on, there'd be no need to see each other again. Steve didn't believe any of it. Today had brought back all the memories and all the hopes, the recollections of what could have been. Maybe it wasn't too late for him and Hallie. The decision was made. Steve didn't hesitate. He hurried out to his car. On the short drive to Federal Way, Steve mulled over his approach. After a quick stop at the grocery, he pulled into the guest parking lot at her new complex. It took him another 10 minutes to find her apartment. After checking the number on the folded sheet of notebook paper he'd carried in his wallet, he stepped onto the porch. If the lights were any indication, she was home. His head was spinning when he pushed her doorbell. The door opened, and his carefully thought-out greeting stuck in his throat. He thrust forward the bouquet of yellow roses he'd bought. Hallie stood there, arms akimbo.
"Is there any reason you brought me flowers?"
"Yes. It's a wedding bouquet. You were cheated back there, and I wanted to give you another chance to catch it."
"Are you going to provide the groom to go with those flowers?" she asked, not missing a beat.
"That all depends."
"Why are you here?" she asked softly, her beautiful eyes pleading with him to say what she wanted to hear. "And if you tell me it's because you need a bowling partner, you go straight to jail."
"If I told you I loved you, would that get me past go so I can collect my $200?
"It's a step in the right direction."
He grinned.
"Why do you love me?"
she asked.
"Why?"
Of all the things he'd expected her to say, this wasn't it. He rubbed his hand along the back of his neck, giving her a puzzled look. "No one told me there'd be a test."
"Is it so difficult?"
"No, but he had to get the answer right. He didn't want there to be any room for doubt."
"Because of Megan and Kenny?"
"No," he smiled as he said it. "Do you want me to count the ways
It might help.
I love you, Hallie, for who you are. For the way you love my children. For the way your eyes light up when you're excited. I love the crazy way you throw a bowling ball and still manage to knock down pins. I think you bake the best chocolate chip cookies I've ever tasted.
What about my chicken dinner?
It's wonderful. And so are you. It seemed to him that her eyes were especially bright. He said, "You're zany and stubborn and strong-willed and wonderful. I'm crazy about you."
How crazy?
Crazy enough to know I'm going to love you the rest of my life. And to know you're the best friend I'm ever going to find. Crazy enough to ask you to marry me.
Marry you?
He nodded. That's why I brought a bridal bouquet.
Bingo!
Steve laughed out loud. Wrong game. All I want is to get past go, collect what's due me, and spend the rest of my life making love to you.
Hallie stumbled into his arms. He caught her and lifted her from the ground, his arms tight around her waist. If he didn't kiss her, soon he'd go mad. As if reading his thoughts, her mouth haphazardly searched for his. The kiss was hungry, even rough. A kiss without subtlety or gentleness. It took several more such kisses to appease the pent-up longing. Then, and only then, was he capable of truly appreciating the woman in his arms. He set her back down, and his hands were in her hair. Her ragged breath was warm against his skin. He inhaled her clean, distinctive scent.
That was the lowest, dirtiest trick anyone ever played on me, she told him, her hands clasped behind his neck.
What was?
Making love to me on the dance floor. Do you have a clue what you were doing to me?
I was experiencing the same thing myself.
Do you forgive me?
She nodded, but her thoughts seemed 1,000 miles away. We're going to be married. And if you so much as think of sleeping with Mary Lynn again, I'll claw your eyes out.
He lowered his head enough so she'd see and hear the truth in his words.
I didn't sleep with her.
Fine. If you ever lie down in the same bed with her, then.
Agreed.
It's all or nothing with me, Steve Maris.
Hey, I wasn't the one who packed up and moved out at the first sign of trouble.
Hallie shook her head as if she regretted that.
I was trying to protect myself. I love you too much to lose you. And hell, I didn't know my condo was going to sell that fast.
Lose me?
To Mary Lynn.
Not hardly. It's true, I didn't want the divorce.
But it happened, and there's no way to go back now.
Mary Lynn has apparently found what she wants, and she's welcome to it. By the same token, I've found you.
I didn't think you wanted to marry me.
I don't take that kind of commitment lightly, Hallie. It's all or nothing with me, too. She cupped his jaw and spread 12 kisses over his face. Her aim less than perfect. Nevertheless, they had the desired effect, as she discovered when he pulled her close against him. Suddenly, she raised her eyes to his. He saw they'd gone dark and serious.
What about children?
He'd given fair consideration to that question himself. Hallie wanted a family, and he wanted to be the one to father her children. I got pretty good at the diapering business. I imagine I can dust off those skills for a new baby. She let out a small, happy cry. Right now, I'm far more interested in making that baby, he said with a wink.
Pure happiness radiated from her entire being.
Giggling, Hallie tossed back her head.
Me too. Oh, Steve, I love you. And I want you so much. But,
she glanced over her shoulder.
We have to go to your place. My sister and her husband are in town for the night.
He groaned in frustration. I've got Megan and Kenny. Hallie banged her forehead repeatedly against his shoulder.
Can you believe it? He said.
We're finally ready to make love, and we can't find any place to do it. Snuggling in his arms, Hallie kissed the underside of his jaw.
Let's be patient. We've got an entire lifetime.
Steve closed his eyes and wondered if a single lifetime was long enough to love Hallie properly. In bed and out of it. Then again, he'd soon find out.
Hallie's Journal, January 1st, 2 years later.
Unlike the past few years, I won't take time to be poetic and inspired. I'm a married woman now, and much too tired and happy. Steve is thrilled that Travis decided to make his debut a week early, for the simple reason that we can deduct him on our income tax. For my part, I could have used an extra week's sleep. Our baby is so beautiful. Steve made me promise I wouldn't say that. Baby boys aren't supposed to be beautiful, but the only other word that suits him is perfect. Steve's delighted to have another son to share guy things with. He's such a wonderful father. But of course, I knew that. Megan and Kenny are thrilled with their little brother. Kenny's so pleased to have another boy in the family, and Megan has to fight her father for the privilege of changing the baby's diaper. I love being a mother. The other morning, as I held Travis to my heart, I felt tears in my eyes at the sheer wonder and joy of this little one in my arms. To think he's actually a part of me and Steve, that he came from my body. 2 years ago, when I first decided I wanted a husband and family, I had no idea how far this adventure would take me. But I'm actually glad I delayed it, because otherwise I wouldn't be married to Steve, and I wouldn't be a stepmom to Megan and Kenny, and we wouldn't have Travis. I can't imagine what my life would be like without them. I sat down this morning with a cup of Seattle's finest coffee brought to me by my husband and my goal planner, just as I do every January 1st. It didn't take me long to realize that my goals have shuffled from my business to my home life, for now anyway, and that's just fine. This matter of marriage and motherhood couldn't have worked out better.